Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It is Friday, so that means all the regular features will be happening. You got Fly Jams Friday, Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, You Big Dummy, all coming up on our regular Friday show. And we got more here coming up in just a few minutes. Rod Pyle is going to join us. He's an award-winning author, and he's a speaker on space. He's a space expert. He's also an editor, the editor of Ad Astra magazine, which is a publication of the National Space Society. He's written several really great books, and there's some great space stories to talk about. That you know, the emergency landing situation that happened last week. We're going to definitely get into that. And also, Rod has seen First Man. And we want to get his thoughts on that, of course, and much more. And if you guys have any questions or comments about space-related issues, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Rod will be here live, so get your questions ready to go and text or call us at 312-981-7200. Coming up after the 2 o'clock news, WGN's own Brian Noonan is going to join us. He's currently in the United Kingdom as part of one of Steve Bertrand's trips. He's with a bunch of WGN listeners. And judging by some of the posts that Brian has been putting on social media, they're having a great time in the UK and really piling in as much stuff as they possibly can in each day. So Brian's having a great time over there in the United Kingdom, and we'll get his stories and what's going on and what they're doing over there now. So we'll get a live report from the UK with our own Brian Noonan. That's coming up, too, and all the regular features. We're also going to talk about urban legends from each state in the country. And we'll talk about that because it's, you know, it's scary time. It's a Halloween time. So let's talk a little bit creepy little urban legends and things like that. Again, you can call us and text us anytime you want, 312-981-7200. In just a couple of minutes, if you have any questions about space or anything that in that regard, 312-981-7200. You can follow us on Twitter, at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. And also, subscribe to our podcast. Every single second of the podcast is, or every single second of the show every day is podcast and set up as podcasts. And you can go to WGNradio.com to check out our podcast page. And also, you can go to iTunes or wherever you get podcasts and subscribe. It's free, and they will be sent to your device automatically. And you can listen at your leisure, bro. So that's what's going on. And and by the way, you can participate in our Friday regular Friday features as well. And that's, you know, Fly Jams Friday. You can get your requests in a little bit later on. DJ Shagru will play them for you. And then also, Straight Out of Context, that's when you listen to this radio station 24/7 whenever anybody says anything that you can pull out of context and it sounds dirty and it makes you giggle. You jot down the day, the time, who said it, send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. And Nick D Show Spies, same thing. Listen 24/7 whenever anybody mentions me or the show in any capacity. You become a spy. Jot all the info down and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. And if you want to be a part of You Big Dummy, You Big Dummy is where we read real news stories of real dumb people doing real dumb stuff. If you want to read one of those stories, find a funny dummy story in the news and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. Say, hey, I'd like to read that. We'll set it all up. You'll read it on the air. Not only will that, you'll get some Lou Malnati's pizza. And that's a win-win-win situation. And also, the listeners this morning, after we do the recap of all the dummy stories, you are our third vote. So the first person through at 312-981-7200 will be the third vote on who is the biggest dummy of the week. So that's all coming up on the show. Let me say hello to my great producer, Dan Shagru. Hi, Dan.
Howdy, Nick.
How are you, man?
Good, man. How about yourself?
I'm all right. You've got an exciting weekend.
Yeah. The girl that introduced Eileen and I, Katie Barrett's getting married. So she's a good family friend. I've known her my entire life and obviously been good friends with Eileen the majority of her life. And she's getting married this weekend. So we're really looking forward to
that's,
it.
That's very, very
yeah.
cool. You had people from out of town coming in.
Yeah. Our Eileen and Katie studied abroad in Ireland with a girl named Emily. And Emily lives in Buffalo and came in for the wedding. So they're staying at our house, her and her husband. So
very cool.
Yeah,
very, very cool. Well, have fun over
Thank
the
you.
weekend. And it's you know, I know the wedding is on Saturday.
Yep.
It's gonna be a little cool.
Yeah.
But it's an indoor wedding.
Yes,
so you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah,
that stuff. All right, very cool.
Yeah.
So have fun over the weekend.
Thank
man.
You
a nice October wedding. You know who else is going to a wedding this weekend?
Maybe I'll see her there.
Maybe my future ex-wife Dana DiLorenzo is going to be in town. I'm going to see her over the weekend, and she's in town for a wedding. So I guess, you know, October 20th is a nice date to get married.
There, it is a good date to get married. Absolutely.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, Dana's going to be in town, and I'm gonna hang out with her for a while over the weekend, and that should be exhausting, and awesome, I should say. So, so that's coming up. Anyway, have a great time over the weekend.
Thank you.
All right, and in the newsroom is my main man Vic Vaughn. Vic, how are you, man?
Doing well, sir. How are you?
Good, good. It is Friday morning, man.
Good morning.
Yeah. Hey, so I talked to you a little bit off the air. You had a really great final class for your improv level 2.
And it felt great because to know that I finished it. Improv was very challenging, complicated to me, a lot of rules that I didn't know what I was getting into. But what an experience and big time growth personally, and so, but I'm glad I did it. Glad because those were the two prerequisites. So now I can move on with voice acting over there, and it's just going to be awesome.
Well, I'm glad you had a good time, and I knew that you would get a lot out of it because you know I'm
so fun.
I am a big supporter of taking improv classes, even if you don't intend on, you know, wanting to be a performer of any kind or to do comedy or anything like that.
It's yes, 100% recommend it.
Yeah, the stuff that you do, the exercises and the rules that are in place, it doesn't just help you on stage. It helps you, I think, in life. That's just
absolutely.
So, but I'm glad that you had a good time and now you're moving on to the voice acting.
Yep.
All right, cool. And so Vic is here. He's in the newsroom covering everything. And that's what's going on this morning. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Any and all space-related questions and comments, text or call 312-981-7200. Let us break. And when we come back, our good friend Rod Pyle is going to join us. We're going to talk about all things space right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Hi, it's Nick DiGilio here. I'm your overnight dude here 1 to 5 a.m. every weekday morning. It's Friday. All our regular Friday features are coming up. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio after 2 o'clock. Our very own Brian Noonan is going to join us live from the United Kingdom. He is on one of Steve Bertrand's trips with a bunch of WGN listeners, and they've been having a great time over the past bunch of days, and we'll get an update on what's been going on and what the trip has been like and all that cool stuff. We'll talk with Brian a little bit later on. We're going to talk about urban legends and much, much more. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text, and if you have any questions related to the world of space, now's the time to call or text at 312-981-7200 because our guest is Rod Pyle. He's an award-winning author and a speaker on space. He's also the editor of Ad Astra Magazine, which is a publication of the National Space Society, and the author of many, many great books. RodPyleBooks.com is the website. We have a link on our Facebook page as well. And let's welcome Rod back to the show. Hi, Rod. How are you, man?
Good morning, sir. I'm great. How are you?
Good, good. Very, very good. Give everybody, you know, the spiel, the background, in case they haven't heard you before, but you are Rod Pyle.
The spiel. I am Rod Pyle, and I'm older than you. So I grew up during the space age, and I got to see all that cool stuff happen. I didn't really become aware of it until kind of the last part of the Gemini program, because I'm not that old. But by the time Apollo was going in full swing, I was really into it. So while the other kids were worshiping football players because the NBA wasn't really a thing yet back in the late 60s, I was an astronaut fanboy. So when it was time for moonwalks, I'd set up both TVs in the house and mix a glass of Tang and have my own little mission control. And I never stopped being interested in it. So I started writing books about it in 2003. And I just calculated the other day that if I include the ones I've done for NASA, this year will be my 17th.
Wow. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
Turns out.
So talk a little bit about, and by the way, thank you for sending us some copies of the Ad Astra magazine. It's really great. It's really, really cool.
Oh, good, good. I'm glad you got it. Yeah, I've been doing that for about a year, and we're up in the game next year. And it's always been a good magazine, but when I started editing, I thought, you know, I really want to punch up the game a bit. So I've been recruiting. We've always had writers that have been regulars in the magazine. They're quite good. But I wanted to recruit some outside people that I knew from Space.com and Universe Today and a number of other outlets who were seasoned and did this for a living, you know, all the time.
Yeah.
And so we've got some really fine new writers come in, and I got an illustrator involved who's done those wonderful covers for us. Did you get the one with the Buzz Aldrin cover, perchance?
Yes.
That blew me away.
Yeah.
when this guy, Jim Vaughn's his name, fine artist. When he sent me that, I thought, okay, this guy's going to do every cover from now on forever. I don't care how much it costs. And it was our first Space cover. So I know I'm kind of gushing about it, but I really loved that one.
Yeah.
And so we're trying to keep the bar high. So, yeah. And it'll be on the newsstands mid-year. It's been a member-only thing for a couple of decades. It was originally for sale everywhere. Then it went to member-only, the National Space Society. But mid-year next year, we're going to do a special Apollo edition, and that's going to go out on the newsstands and bookstores and stuff. So that'll be really cool.
That's great. It's a really great magazine. It really is. You do a great job, man.
Thanks.
I also want to mention that that in May of next year, right around the time when you're saying that it's Ad Astra, the magazine is going to be in bookstores and on newspaper stands, there's a movie. Are you aware that there's a movie called Ad Astra with Brad Pitt coming out?
No.
Oh.
Tell me all about it.
Okay. I just found this out. It's called Ad Astra. It stars Brad Pitt, Tommy Lee Jones, Donald Sutherland, Ruth Negga, Jamie Kennedy. And here's what the synopsis on it comes out May 24th, so it's a big Memorial Day weekend release.
Right.
And it says it's a very, you know, scant plot on IMDb, but it says astronaut Roy McBride travels to the outer edges of the solar system to find his missing father and unravel a mystery that threatens the survival of our planet. So there it is.
Sounds like the Planet X story a little bit, doesn't it? Maybe?
Yeah. And
you know that big ugly thing out there that's making all the big rocks outside of Pluto's orbit they have found moving all those weird directions. They think there's something multiple size times the size of Earth out there. I wonder if that's where Dad went.
Yeah.
Frozen his colonies off out there.
Yeah, I became aware of this the other morning when I was just going through the upcoming titles. I was just looking at what was coming up, you know, for the rest of the year and the beginning of next year. And as soon as I saw that title, I wonder if Rod knows about this.
I don't, but I will say I hope it's better than Interstellar.
Oh man.
I know. I had to start, right? We're going to be talking about a movie tonight, so I just had to, you know,
right,
roll the first grenade there.
I understand.
But, I mean, if anything can be better than Interstellar, if it's possible for a movie to be better than Interstellar, maybe it'll be this one.
Okay. All right. So it's got a great cast, you know, and the director, the director has done some good work in the past, and I mean, you know,
who's the director?
James Gray is his name, and he has directed We Own the Night, which is a really interesting film. He's kind of an art house director, which is kind of interesting. And the last movie that he directed was a movie called The Lost City of Z, which unfortunately only about three people saw, and it was a really terrific movie.
What a great story. I didn't see it either, but I read the book and was working on a book with somebody else that never got finished, but it was kind of along the same lines, which is why I actually read that one. And what an incredible story.
Yeah. No, and it's really directed well and very exciting and a great adventure. So, you know, he's bringing that with him to this movie, which could be good. And I also love the fact that Tommy Lee Jones and Donald Sutherland are in it, and they were both in Space Cowboys. So I like that. I think that's pretty. What did you think of Space Cowboys,
I mean,
Rod?
Even if you, no, I'm not going to say, even if you put those guys at near light speeds as you shot them out beyond Pluto's orbit to Planet X or Planet 9 or wherever they're going,
yeah,
you know, do they have enough time left to make it anywhere? I don't mean to be uncharitable because I'm, you know, 60 plus a few months, but those guys are old. They're really old.
Yeah. Yeah, I enjoyed the hell out of Space Cowboys, though. I really did. I thought it was pretty great. And I don't know. I mean, obviously, I
love both those guys. And the thing I love about Donald Sutherland is here's a guy that never saw a role he didn't like. Now, and he's been asked that in multiple interviews, you probably know. They said, why do you do all these weird knockoff, small, not very successful sometimes movies? And he said, because I like to act.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's really beautiful. That's the same reason I keep writing books for not tons of money, because I love to write, right?
Yeah.
And you love to be on radio. And I know you're making, you know, $250 a year plus or something.
Oh,
but for the rest of us, you know, we do it because we love it.
Well, it's funny, you know.
But that's not how radio works?
That's not how it works, Rod. I don't mean to burst any bubbles, but that's not how it works.
There go my career change plan.
I do want to mention before we break here for the news that Donald Sutherland is one of my favorite actors, and we were talking about this. Anytime we talk about great actors, Donald Sutherland comes up. And, you know, he's never been nominated for an Academy Award.
I remember that from about 10 years ago, but it stuns me that that's still the case.
It's ridiculous. It is ridiculous. Okay.
It's horrible.
Yeah, it is. Rod, hang on, okay?
Let's make a campaign for that.
Let's
do
that. Okay, hang on a second. Rod Pyle is with us, and we're talking about, we're going to talk about First Man and other things as well. And if you have any questions or comments that concern space, it's 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720. It's 720 WGN. That's what the radio. I should do the call letters, don't you think, Dan? Just saying 720 is not quite enough. I was going to move on to my next thought. Hey, by the way, I'm not going to get loopy. I remember I said yesterday, Vic and Dan, you guys remember, I said I was going to be loopy. They canceled the damn Suspiria screening.
Ah.
Because the DP, the print, the computer chip that they have to put inside the projector never made it to the theater.
No kidding.
So they canceled the screening.
Did you have to,
No, they contacted me. The publicist contacted me. It was late afternoon when they said, you know, it's not going to be there in time, so we need to contact everybody. So they contacted me. And of course, you know, they rescheduled it, though, for today at 10 a.m. Thanks.
Wow, tons of notice.
Yeah, no, but I mean, 10 a.m., I will be asleep at 10 a.m.
Well, hopefully you didn't blow your cover with that. You know, if you get loopy later now, you got no excuse.
No, exactly, you're right. And I had my Suspiria shirt on. I'm wearing my Suspiria shirt from the original movie. I was going to go there and dork out. You know what I mean? No, that's going to end up on the show next Friday. All right. All right, so anyway, we're here. It's Friday morning. Coming up after the 2 o'clock news, our good friend Brian Noonan is going to join us. He is in the United Kingdom right now as part of one of the Steve Bertrand trips, and he's with a bunch of GN listeners, and they're having a great time. We'll catch up with him after the news. But right now, Rod Pyle is with us. He's an award-winning author, an expert on space, written several books, the editor of Ad Astra magazine, and let's bring him back onto the show. Hi, Rod.
Hello.
All right. So we'll get into First Man a little bit later on, because the big story that we need to talk about is this emergency landing situation that happened last week. This was kind of scary. I was on the air when it all happened, when they didn't, you know, when because Vic was following it in the newsroom, too. And we were all like on the edge of our seats for a little while. But tell everybody what happened.
So that was Thursday. And it was about 4:40 in the morning Eastern time, and this was a launch of two astronauts, one Russian, one American, up to the space station aboard a Soyuz capsule on a Soyuz rocket. And that system's had a pretty good safety record, but it still has an escape tower on the top, just like the Apollo spacecraft did back in the 60s. And in fact, the Soyuz, as you know, was originally designed back in the 60s to beat the Americans to the moon, and right, it didn't, but it's become the most flown spacecraft, I think, in history now. And, you know, it was neck and neck with Apollo, and we junked Apollo in the mid-70s, sadly. And so you soldiers on, so they've really gotten their money out of it. So anyway, very reliable system, but they've had occasional failures. And this is the first time in a long time that the escape tower was used. So they were launching. Things looked good for a couple minutes, and then suddenly, if you look at the video, a bunch of silver, looked like chaff, came out the back of the engine right as it was staging. And I thought, oh, crap, they lost a turbine or something. But apparently there was something wrong with the second stage, or when they went for staging, one of the accounts said they thought it nicked the back end of the capsule. I don't know what happened yet. But basically it was bad enough that they realized they had to get away from the rocket. So you hit the abort switch, and these solid rockets on top of the capsule light up, and you're subjected to double-digit Gs for a few seconds until it gets away. And then because it pulled the capsule away, but it hasn't made it to space yet, it just arcs like a big cannonball. So you go into what's called a ballistic reentry, which means instead of the 3 to 5 Gs you might get in a normal reentry where you're gliding on the heat shield a little bit, it's more like 7 or 8. And it doesn't sound like a lot more, but if you're in there with 8 times the force of normal gravity pressing down on you, it's a lot. But they were okay, and they landed on dry land and walked away from it. But the big problem now is they've got to investigate what happened. We already had that issue, because I think we talked about before, with the hole they found
in
the Soyuz up at the station now, which is, of course, that's their get-home ride, right? It's got a hole. Fortunately, it's not in the descent module. It's in the orbital module. These things separate for the re-enter, so it'll be okay. But, you know, there's a quality control question here, right? So now we've got this. So no idea how long it's going to take them to figure out what happened. And the capsule that's up there now, the certificates on it expire in December, so they got to come home in December, or it could start leaking fuel or something. So if the long and short of it is, because we don't have any other way to get up there, if they don't get that thing launchable before the end of December, the station could be empty, and that could be very bad.
Oh, man. And they have a schedule of launches that they that are now completely, that's gone.
Yeah, and not only is it gone because of this problem with the Soyuz, but it's also gone. You know, we're supposed to be flying with Boeing and SpaceX by now. They're grossly behind schedule. So the only other option, which I haven't seen anybody talk about because they're probably not considering it at all, is the Chinese. Have not been invited to be on the space station. It was considered at one point, but we've just got too many issues with intellectual property and espionage concerns and so forth. But, you know, they've got at least one of their version of the Soyuz capsule that could go, the Shenzhou, but I don't think that's going to happen.
You know, it's the I read an account from one of the American astronaut, Nick Hogg? What's his name?
Haig, yeah.
Okay, Nick Haig, an account of what it was like to be inside there when it happened, and it was terrifying.
Oh,
I mean, just absolutely terrifying. I read this, and I was like, I don't know. But he said that he went right. They just put everything on check, emotions and all that stuff. They put all that in the back of their heads, and they went right to their training. And he praised the fact that that's what they did, and that their training is what made this thing, you know, turn out to be okay.
Yeah, and that's why it's so intensive. And that's, you know, in addition to the money we have to pay, the $80 million or so we got to pay for each seat on that capsule, which probably covers most of the cost of launching it, if not more. They also, NASA pays additional money for training over in Star City in Russia because it's their machine. So, of course, most of the training happens there.
Yeah.
Did you see the video of the abort?
I did not, no.
For chance?
No.
So they showed the rocket going up, and they showed all the bad silver stuff happening around staging time. And then there's a video of the inside, and these guys are strapped in, but their arms are going all over the place, practically hitting themselves in the face because it was such a violent ride. And these guys are the peak of physical shape, you know? So it was a nasty ride down, and I'm just so glad that everything worked the way it was supposed to, because there's been some concern about the Soyuz, obviously, because of the problems with the Russian space industry in general.
Yeah. Well, it was, I mean, I'll tell you what, it was very intense in the newsroom and here when we first heard
about
it. You know, we were like, oh my God, we have to cover this. And I think we were talking about something very jovial at the time, Dan. Weren't we doing something really, really lighthearted? And we were like, oh man, you know, we hope this turns out okay. And we when the report started to come back that the guys were okay, we were very relieved to hear that. But wow, that's just scary, scary stuff. I also want to mention. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, we both remember at least two space disasters, Columbia and Challenger, and nobody wants to go through that again. Right. And it's always a nail biter when these guys are going up.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do want to mention this, that Haig, that was his first space mission.
Right.
Now the
rookie, you want to see something really exciting?
Yeah, strap in, rookie. But the Russian,
it kind of made me think of the Twilight Zone movie when I think it was Dan Aykroyd leans over and says, "You want to see something really scary?"
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say that, but the Russian astronaut had spent 6 months on the International Space Station a couple of years ago, so he's had a mission before, but this was the American's first.
Yeah, the Russians are tough. I mean, you know, they're dealing with older machinery, and it's a pretty lean program over there. And it's not quite as deluxe as NASA likes to do things. You know, it's a little more rough and ready.
Yeah.
And arguably SpaceX is, too. I mean, their quality control is extremely good in both places. But, you know, they're working to a price. And the Russian budget, their annual budget for the space program is about a tenth of NASA's. And labor costs are lower, but they're not that much lower. So it's pretty tight.
Yeah.
I did want to mention that there was an op-ed by Leroy Chow, who was also a shuttle space station astronaut, talking about the seriousness of this. And he was mentioning, you know, the schedule offset of how long will it take to recertify the Soyuz,
right.
And those guys can come home and the one they've got, but what about not going up? So, you know, one of the questions that comes up is what happens if there's nobody there for a few months? And it was really never designed for that. So his claim anyway, somebody will probably push back on this, but his claim was that over time, because that thing needs to be intermittently reoriented manually, and I think they could do it from the ground, but he thought there was a chance it would present a problem, that it would go into a slow tumble. He says crews manually control it, and if that happens, you can no longer dock with it, and the antennas lose radio lock, so the ground can't communicate with it potentially. And then, because it's tumbling, it's increasing the drag, and the next thing you know, you've got an uncontrolled reentry of a really, really, really large, heavy space station.
Mm.
So this makes Skylab look like a, you know,
yeah,
but much smaller thing. So that would be bad.
Yeah,
so they're gonna have to figure out something.
And then Russia Russia wants three successful robotic flights before another crew before the next crew launch. Does that seem like that's going to be possible?
They're going to have to do it really fast because they've got about, 10 weeks before the other guy's got to come home. And I think it can be empty for a while. You know, it's not critical.
Right.
And they can probably certify the Soyuz to stay a little longer because, you know, I think the expiration of the certificates in December is very conservative. So they might say, well, you know, we can really stretch that to early to mid-February or something. That's
right.
Just conjecture on my part, but just kind of seeing what they've done in the past, because it's a pretty robust system. But, yeah, they're going to have to work really, really fast, and that's not something that always works well in space flight, as you know.
Yeah, true. Very true. A couple of texts have come in, Rod. An 815 area code says, what was the setback on the Webb telescope?
They were practicing unfolding it. So the Webb has got the main telescope assembly, which is this 21-foot, roughly, diameter mirror that unfolds in multiple cells. So they look like octagons, and like stop signs, and they unfold into this big 21-foot thing. And then below that, it's got this capped-on sun shield because it sees in infrared, so it's got to be kept very cool. So they've got a sunshade of multiple layers of Kapton. Interestingly, from the bottom, it looks just like the Star Wars Imperial Cruiser.
You know, is that right?
Same kind of kite shape. Yeah, it's really kind of spooky. So they were unfolding that at north of Grumman down here in Southern California, and it hung up and then finally tore because it's very delicate. And there's a lot going on there. You know, there's pulleys and levers and hinges and all kinds of stuff. So that was a setback. So the launch has been delayed again. I think the last estimated launch is going to be this year. Now it's been delayed to 2021. And the budget's just kind of, you know, gone through the roof.
Mm.
The original budget estimate, like back around 2000, was $1.6 billion, but I don't think anybody took that seriously. So when they started building it, it was going to be $5 billion. Now it looks like it's going to be closer to 10 by the time it's up there and operating. But, you know, 100% overage is not unheard of in complex space missions, and it's going to be one for the record books. Because look at Hubble. It's been up there, 28 years or something?
Mm-hmm.
Still operating. There's some concern because they just lost their third gyro, and they have three left. And if they lose another one, it's going to shut down. But when you look at the PR value of that thing, I mean, it's been the gift that keeps giving to NASA and science for almost 30 years. And the Webb is going to make that thing look like, you know, a kid's toy telescope. So
yeah,
it's just a remarkable thing if they can get it to work.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Rod, hang on, okay?
You bet.
All right, Rod Pyle is with us, space expert, and we're going to talk about the movie First Man. And if you've got any questions or comments, text, call 312-981-7200. More with Rod after this. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's Friday. All the regular Friday features will be happening. Fly Jams Friday. Straight out of context, Nick D's show Spies, You Big Dummy. We are also going to talk about famous urban legends from each state in the country. It's Halloween time. We love to talk about that kind of spooky stuff. And then after the 2 o'clock news, our very own Brian Noonan is going to join us. He's currently in the United Kingdom as part of one of Steve Bertrand's trips. He's with a bunch of WGN listeners, and we're going to talk about the fun that they are having over there across the pond. So that's coming up. And also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Right now, we are talking with Rod Pyle. He is our space expert, has written many books, is the editor of the Ad Astra magazine. You can check out rodpylebooks.com. We have a link on our Facebook page. Let's bring Rod back. Hey, Rod.
Hey.
Okay, so let's talk first man.
First man.
Yes. Now, yeah. I'm no expert or anything. I loved the movie. I absolutely loved it. I saw it in IMAX. Did you see it in IMAX, Rod?
I did, and I didn't get sick. A lot of people complained about that, but I didn't find it bothersome at all.
Well, I mean, I found it kind of astonishing, especially the sound design.
But I mean, there are people saying that they got vertigo from the handheld camera, and I thought, come on, man, take some Dramamine.
Well, what did you think?
Well, so I really loved it when I saw it. There were a few moments that pulled me out of it. May I list them very quickly?
Yeah, of course.
Because I have to, right?
Yeah.
So the X-15, you know, the X-15 launch, I mean, if it had been quite that bad, those guys probably would have come back dead. So it was intense, you know, and I think that really did represent it well, but it was a little over the top. But, you know, I didn't want to take my word for it, because what do I know? I never flew it. So I got a hold of the wife of an X-15, the last surviving X-15 pilot that I know, Jeannie Angle, who's Joe Angle's wife, and he flew on the shuttle as well as the X-15. Amazing guy, really, really humble. You know, I've talked to him before about, oh, we ought to do a book, and he goes, nobody wants to know about my life. Are you kidding? Genuine hero,
yeah.
And there aren't many of those. Anyway, so I asked her, and she said, well, you know, it represented it well, but it was torqued up. You know, it wasn't that bad. But it gave you an idea of just how scary it was to fly one of those planes, because that was, you know, designed in the 50s, right? So the technology was pretty basic. You were pushing buttons and joysticking. He did say that the joysticking was very mild, so it didn't take extreme motions. But of course, Armstrong would try to, you know, get back to Earth, which is kind of important. So there was that. Gemini 8.
Yes.
Now, this one did bother me because, so they dock with the Agena, the other rocket to dock with,
right?
The other stage.
Mm-hmm.
And then it starts to roll. Now, they had, as it turned out, there was a thruster that shorted on the back of the Gemini, so it started pushing that whole thing around, but they thought it was the Agena, as you saw. So they put in the command to try and shut down the Agena computer. It's still happening. So they figured, well, we better disconnect while we can, because that Agena was full of fuel. It had thousands of gallons of fuel in it.
Right.
So they wanted to get the hell away from it so it didn't torque out and explode. Now, when it started to tumble, it was really slow and gentle, and it was only after they disconnected that it got fast and violent. So in the movie, it was like, bam, teacups. You know?
Right.
Everything in the capsule slams against the wall. So I realized the movie, and they don't have a lot of time to fart around, but I think it was represented much better in From the Earth to the Moon, if you remember that, where they had the same scenario going. It just takes a little more time.
I did see, by the way, I did see the video that you, from the YouTube video, of it, and it was slower, but I will say this, the transmissions between them, they've got pretty much right on the money in the movie.
Yeah, I mean, when it happened, they were out of contact. That was a really scary part.
Right.
It wasn't until they were well into it that they came back in touch, and I think they showed that very well in the film. They were talking to a relay ship, because the tracking was not contiguous all around the world. Here's a small thing, but this art directors make me crazy. So every spaceship they got in, every spacecraft, whether it was Gemini or Apollo, there was dirt and worn switches and scratches and gunk. It looked like it had been a museum for 30 years with kids getting in there, picking their noses and wiping their fingers around. And it's like, excuse me, this stuff was pristine. It was sealed. Other than the astronauts, only technicians of white booties and little things on their heads could go in there, or other astronauts dressed up in bunny suits to set the switches.
Right.
They were perfect because they only flew once. But somebody decided to make these things look like fighter aircraft that had been in service for 40 years. So I called a guy who I know is an Air Force pilot who spent some time around NASA hardware, a guy named Tony Poshkin. I said, what's the deal here? He said, oh, it's crazy. Those things were perfect. He said, the fighter jets I flew in were dirty and scratched up sometimes, but not the spacecraft. So that was one of the last things real quick.
Yeah.
that year-end shot where... is it okay to have a spoiler?
Yeah, yeah, go ahead.
This point? Yeah. Okay.
No, by the way, Rod, nobody's going to see the movie. It is not doing well at the moment.
I saw that. Isn't it shocking?
It's ridiculous. It's really a shame because people, I think, should see this movie because I think it's great. But go ahead. What were you going to say?
I do too.
Yeah.
And I assume that, well, so the daughter's hospital bracelet, you know, his daughter dies at she's two and he's carrying around all this guilt and remorse and stuff. And he throws a bracelet apparently in West Crater. And there's really no evidence that that happened. It was just kind of something that the author pieced together and the director went with, author of First Man, James Hansen. So, you know, there's an idea there, but Armstrong never said it. The kids don't know because he never talked about this. He really was pretty quiet.
Yeah.
So the last thing I'll say is, you know, the portrayal of Armstrong is this, like, almost crippled guy when it comes to emotion, I think was a little strong. But I thought it was a great acting job on Gosling's part because you're acting by not acting, right?
Right, right, right.
But, you know, if you listen to the downlink from being on the moon, as I have many times, probably 50, you know, they were giddy up there.
Yeah.
Final thing is, I felt that Buzz Aldrin was treated very shabbily.
Okay, I was going to ask you about that because he really, in many scenes, he comes off as a real jerk.
He got, well, extremely, very over the top and kind of nasty, really tuned out. And, you know, it was difficult for some of the other guys to understand him, and I get that. I can't say I'm good friends with him, but I've been well acquainted with him for about, I don't know, 15 years, something like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, he can be challenging because he's brilliant and he speaks his mind and he wants to talk about the things that he's interested in, which is orbital dynamics and flight to Mars and all that. But let's just do a quick rundown. The guy had a PhD in orbital mechanics. He's the only astronaut at that time that had a PhD from MIT, no less. In the Gemini program, he was on the final flight, extravehicular activity, doing stuff outside the spacecraft had defeated every crew before him. They all tried it. Each one got a little further, but it was Aldrin, just by dint of hundreds of hours in a training pool and in zero-G airplane trainers, doggedly going after simulation after simulation. And the other guys, you know, a lot of them said, "You're nuts. Just go up there and do it. How hard could it be?" He said, "I am going to train this thing until I can do it in my sleep." And he went up and he did it. And it was the thing that made Gemini transition to Apollo because that was the last bridge they had to cross, and that was their last chance. Finally, on Gemini 12, same flight, they're trying to rendezvous with the Agena, that same thing that Gemini 8 was going to rendezvous with.
Right.
And the rendezvous radar went out. It wasn't talking to the computer anymore. I think I've told this story before, but Aldrin pulled out a sextant, a pencil, a slide rule, and manually navigated that thing, using less fuel than anybody had used to do the rendezvous to date.
Wow!
So you got to give the guy some credit.
Yeah.
You know,
I was surprised.
And
I was surprised.
That was a little shabby.
I was surprised at the portrayal. We're out of time, Rod. But I absolutely love the movie. I think it's one of the best of the year. And I ask people to see it in IMAX for the full.
Yeah,
experience.
It's a must see. Absolutely. Absolutely, and do see it in IMAX if you can because it's well worth it. Don't wait till it comes to your home screen.
No. The bigger, the better. That's the way you got to see it.
Yeah. Well,
I'm glad you liked it, Rod. And it was great talking to you again. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
We finally like the same movie, Nick.
How about that?
I'm thrilled. Thanks.
All right, Rod, take care. Rod Pyle, everybody. All right, let's take a break. We got the news. A little late to the news here, but we wanted to hear Rod's thoughts on the portrayal of Buzz Aldrin in First Man. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here every weekday morning from 1 to 5 a.m. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And later on, get your Fly Jam requests in. All the Friday features will be coming up, including You Big Dummy, Straight Outta Context, Nick D Show, Spies, and more. We're going to talk about urban legends, too, because it's Halloween time. We want to talk about some spooky urban legends, and that's coming up. Right now, though, we want to join with our friend Brian Noonan, who you can hear right here on this radio station. He's currently in the United Kingdom as part of one of Steve Bertrand's trips with a bunch of WGN listeners, and I've been following along, and they seem to be having a fantastic time over there. And you can follow Brian on Facebook for pictures and updates. Facebook.com/TheBrianNoonanShow. And we thought we would check in with Brian to see how things are going. And Brian, how are you, man?
Hello, Nick. How are you?
Wow. See, you've already. I see you've been there for like 6 days. You've already got the accent.
I've been here a week, and just like my good friend Madonna, I have adopted the culture. I will be speaking like this until I tire of it, which will probably be within the next 30 seconds.
Well, that's great, man. So,
I'm back.
Okay, good, good, good. We're all glad that you're back, bro. Was this your first trip to the UK?
This is, and it's been wonderful. I am realizing, and I knew this having been to Spain, I am actually too big for Europe and the UK. Everything is smaller.
Mm.
The bathrooms are smaller. That's my only complaint. I love everything else. I can't wait to get home to my shower where I can actually turn around. It's going to be exciting.
That is exciting. So now this is part of the Steve Bertrand trips. How many people how many people are on the trip with you?
My group has 43 people, and we've been, as you said, we got here last Friday, and we have been going nonstop until, well, we've got today. This morning I'm meeting the group, and we're going to Westminster Abbey, and then we have a day of leisure, as they like to say. So we'll be. Then everybody's on their own to try to cram as much into the next day and a half in London as we can.
That sounds great. I've been reading some of your reports, and you're not kidding, Brian. You guys are cramming a lot of stuff in every day. I mean, wow.
It's nuts.
Yeah.
It's nuts. For example, we got here early Friday morning. We landed at about 7 o'clock. And after we got our bags and through customs and everything, we immediately went to Buckingham Palace. We took a quick walk around there. Then we went to the Victoria Albert Museum. We still hadn't been to the hotel. We did a bus sightseeing tour, which, to be honest, I slept through that because we had been up for 24 hours.
Right.
But then we got to the hotel, had dinner, and the next day it was the Tower of London and St. Paul's Cathedral. Sunday we left, went to Stonehenge. We've been to Oxford and Cambridge and the Cotswolds, and we spent a day and a half in Stratford-upon-Avon, as they like to say, to learn everything we could ever want to know about Shakespeare, and we saw a play at the Royal Shakespeare Theater.
Well, wait, which play did
which
you
was kind of
which play?
I thought of you. It was kind of a Mad Max version of one of Shakespeare's classics.
I
should have had that. I should have had that handy. I can't remember.
Okay,
Tavis and something. It was. I have not seen Shakespeare in quite some time. I haven't really read any Shakespeare since college. So it took me a while to get back in the Shakespeare mindset.
Yeah.
But it was stunning, and the theater was set up in the old style because this was a newly renovated theater there at the Royal Shakespeare Center. So it was it's been fun. And then yesterday was Bletchley Park, the home of the Codebreakers during World War II.
Mm-hmm.
So that was fascinating, and we. Then we were in Cambridge. We took a little punting tour down the waterways to see the backs of the college. That's the way they do it there. And then we were back in London for our last group dinner. Today we have our last group outing. And then, as I said, everybody's on their own to kind of run around. So it has been nonstop. Of course, being me, I did manage to squeeze in a couple pub visits because you can't come to Great Britain without going to the pub.
There's no question about it. And I understand that was this your first time eating mushy peas?
It was my first time eating mushy peas. I'll be honest, I detest peas.
Mm.
Growing up, my dad loved peas, so we would have peas all the time, and I detest them.
Mm.
But when in Rome or when in Britain, you do that, and so I had mushy peas, and I actually liked the mushy peas. My wife, not so much, but I enjoyed the mushy peas.
Well, I saw the picture of the fish and chips that you guys had. That's traditional, and the mushy peas. And
yes.
You had the curry sauce for the chips, which is
curry sauce
fantastic.
For the chips. Yep,
yep. And
that was not a bad lunch at all. That was delicious.
And in food wise, what else have you had, and what were some of your favorite places that you've eaten?
No, it's been strange because a lot of our lunches were grabbing sandwiches basically from what they call the services, which is like if you were on the tollway going to Indiana
and
you stop at those big oases.
Right.
We were getting a lot of those sandwiches for lunch. But we went to a tavern. Our friend Sarah Tiemann from WGN, her husband John is from Salisbury. So we had a night in Salisbury, and they had recommended a couple of places for dinner. We went to A place that is supposedly haunted. It's hundreds of years old. The Haunch of Venison. So they have a mummified hand, actually, in the wall that they discovered when they were remodeling. It was a lot of fun. That was probably one of the most authentic pubs I was in. And I had, because I was at the Haunch of Venison, I had venison sausages with on top of the mashed potatoes with the gravy. That was really good and different. It's been... I'm blanking on a lot of the food because we had a group dinner when we got here, right at the hotel, and that was kind of a chicken Kiev kind of thing that we had pre-ordered. We had a nice meal pre-theater at the Royal Shakespeare Center that was, I think it was some sort of short rib. It was very delicious. Last night we went to a swanky joint for our last group dinner, and it was lamb. It was very good. You know, lamb very popular over here.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so that was good with a nice creme brulee. And today I'm in search of a shepherd's pie. That is my quest before I leave town. Mm-hmm. I also had a couple of traditional Cornish pasties, which were delicious.
Oh, man, those are delicious.
And a meat. Those were unbelievable.
Oh, man, yeah.
Unbelievable. And again, my wife was like, ooh, I don't like it. So I was like, okay, get yourself a ham and cheese sandwich at the shop over there. I'm gonna have this pasty. For those who don't know, it's steak and potato and onion all folded in. Looks like a turnover in this delicious pastry. Oh, it was so good.
Yeah.
And so we had that, and then a meat pie. Have you ever had a meat pie?
Yes, I've eaten a lot of British and Irish food.
Okay. This surprised me. We were at the Borough Market, which is a huge, you'd love it. It's a huge foodie place.
Yeah.
Stands of prepared foods and any kind of food you want to buy to cook for yourself. And I thought, well, this was last Saturday. And I thought, well, I'm in London. I should do something very local for my lunch. So I got a meat pie, which is served cold, a sausage pie.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And all I kept thinking as I ate it was, man, this would be really good heated up.
Yeah.
Because the jelly, which I thought was just the grease from the sausage, but it's actual jelly, there's kind of a congealed feel that that you might, it takes a little getting used to.
It certainly does, yeah.
But the food has been good. The weather has been nice. As I was listening to Vic do the forecast, it's about the same here as it is at home. 60 today, but mostly sunny. We only had one day, and it was the day, of course, we were outside most of the day when we did Windsor Palace, Stonehenge, and then we got to Oxford and did an outdoor walking tour, and it was raining and about 50. That was the most unpleasant weather day.
Well, let me ask you about Stonehenge, man, because I've always been fascinated. Yes. I've never been there. I've always been fascinated by it. How cool is Stonehenge?
It's really, really cool. It's when you first drive up, and they warned our guide warned us about this, it's kind of a letdown because you think after seeing pictures that it's this giant, tall structure. And it's big. But when you walk up to it, it's like, oh, it's a little smaller than I thought. But then
it's not like the Spinal Tap size, right? Of Stonehenge.
It's a little bit bigger than Spinal Tap size.
Okay, just wanted to
say. There were a few people dancing in front of it for perspective, so you could tell it was like, all right, this is a little more impressive than the Spinal Tap version.
Right.
But once that's when you see it from the road. When you see it from the road, you're like, oh, it's kind of small. But then as you get up to it and you see the sheer size of these rocks, and you're like, and they're explaining the terrain and how the rocks didn't come from anywhere local. The rocks came from hundreds of miles away, based on the geography of the area.
Yeah,
and you're like, how did these people? One, how did they carve them? How did they bring them?
Yeah,
you know, the top of the stones that stand straight up and down, the tops have little nubs on top that have been carved in, so that the stones that lay across fit on. They're not balanced. It's like a tongue and groove kind of thing.
Wow.
So they actually slide them in, and there's one stone that has fallen over the years where you can see they kind of made a mistake. They didn't measure twice, cut once, as Lou Manfredini would advise us. They they must have carved out a hole and tried to get it up there, and it didn't fit, and so they had to drill a second hole right next to it so that it would fit on top of the pillar. It's an amazing sight, yeah. And to walk, they've now over the years have built a nice visitor center, and then you can either walk up, which is about a half hour walk, or you can take a shuttle bus up, and then you walk the entire ring of it, and it is, wow. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
One of the people on the tour is still convinced that aliens put it there,
right?
Because
sure.
There's no other way to do it,
right?
I don't know, when you hear the stories about these people pulling these rocks and how many hours and how many tons these are, all right, maybe aliens did it, I don't know. Because I think to myself, I wouldn't have been hauling a giant stone hundreds of miles to stack it somewhere else.
Yeah, it's true. And
if you ever get a chance to come back, you have to see it. It's awe-inspiring.
That's great. Well, listen, it sounds like you guys are having a great, great time and keeping busy. Now, I know that the listeners are want to know when you're coming back on the air.
That's a good question,
yeah.
Nick. Sports have taken over the airwaves.
Yeah.
But we have, before I left, we recorded a brand new podcast that will drop at 3 o'clock on Sunday,
okay.
When the show should be starting. So anytime we're not live, there will be a new recorded show that we'll put up on the on WGNRadio.com and on the Facebook page. So we're always bringing you new things, even when we're not actually in the building.
Right, right. When you're preempted by sports, you can still check out Brian Noonan.
Yes.
On WGNRadio.com.
Yeah. Oh, and I need to pass a message along. A number of the people on the tour stay up all night and listen to you. So they said, make sure you tell Nick that he has a lot of listeners on the tour. And I said, I will tell Nick he has a lot of listeners on the tour. So Nick, you have a lot of listeners on the tour.
Well, tell them I appreciate their listening, and I'm glad that they listen. It sounds like you're having a great time, Brian. Thank you so much for taking a little time to talk to us and give us an update on the trip.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Nick. We will see everybody back in America. Cheerio! Everything's brilliant over here.
Okay, take care, Brian. There you go. Brian Noonan, everybody. He'll be back on the air or on your radio or on your podcast about Sunday. And he's in the United Kingdom right now. And again, if you want to check out some of the Steve Bertrand trips, these are part of Steve Bertrand's regular trips. Check out SteveBertrandTravel.com for future trips. Lots of stuff scheduled, too. Lots of GN people going on these trips. So check out SteveBertrandTravel.com. And Brian Noonan from the United Kingdom, thanks for hanging out with us, and safe journey home. All right, let's take a quick break right here on 720 WGN. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. Fun talking to Brian there. Sounds like they're having a fantastic time on that trip to the UK. Sounds like everybody's having a really good time, so that's great. Yeah, and we are here on WGN. It's Friday morning, Fly Jams Friday. Straight out of context, Nick D Show Spies, all coming up right here on the show, all of our regular features. And we're going to talk about the creepiest urban legends in every state. Ooh, scary. Ooh. So that's coming up. But I want to mention here, I got a couple of minutes. I would like to mention my next film club screening. It's our tribute to Burt Reynolds. We are going to screen the 1974 version of The Longest Yard, a true classic and one of Burt Reynolds' best and most entertaining movies. It very rarely gets screened, and we've got the 4K digital remastered version of it that we're going to show on the big screen in the premiere theater at the AMC Rosemont 18, with the big plush love seats, and you can eat and drink and have fun. The movie will start at 8. I'll introduce it. We will watch The Great Longest Yard. And then afterwards, I'll give you a little Q&A. We'll talk about some of the trivia, behind-the-scenes stuff, talk about Burt Reynolds. And in general, just really watch on the big screen a movie that is made for an audience. A real crowd-pleaser, very, very funny movie. And really great. A great prison movie, a great football movie, and one of Burt Reynolds' best movies of all time. It's only $10. Only $10, and parking is free. It's at the AMC Rosemont 18. Easy to get to. If you don't want to drive, you can take the blue line, get off at the Rosemont stop, and it's a 5-minute walk. So come and see The Longest Yard on Tuesday, November 13th. Get your seats now. Tickets are on sale right now. Reserve your seats at amctheaters.com. So go to amctheaters.com right now. It's November 13th. $10 parking is free. Reserve your seats for The Longest Yard, and we'll see you all on Tuesday, November 13th. Again, amctheaters.com. Get your tickets for Longest Yard right now. All right, we're going to break. We got the news, and then after that, we're going to talk about creepy urban legends. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, high above downtown Chicago. And it's Friday. Yeah! Fly Jams Friday. Straight out of context, Nick D Show Spies, You Big Dummy. All of our regular features are coming up. But right now, though, we're going to talk about the creepiest urban legend in every state. Dan, we should probably just do our neighboring states and Illinois first, right? And then kind of spread out. Well, let's see what this guy thinks.
Look into my eyes. Gotcha.
Oh. He doesn't seem to be very concerned about where we start. Or how about this guy?
Wrong switch, Igor.
You know, Dan, we have a very highly intellectual show here. I just want you to know that.
I mean, we've got guests talking about space. We've got guests talking about England. We're culturally and intellectually significant.
Open the coffin. Let me out.
That's my favorite one, as you know. Do you have a favorite for Fartula? The garlic?
No, Fartula, it would be, that's going to live forever, too.
Oh, we haven't heard that one in
we
a while.
Have not.
Wait a minute. What's wrong with Fartula? Hey, buddy, what?
Sink your teeth into that.
Wow, he's just teasing us now, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
All right, what about Fartenstein? How about this
Rick
one?
Rick or treat.
I think I like, that one rattled my bolts.
Because it sounds like Orin and reminds me of Matt Bolts.
I wonder how Bolts is doing. Does anybody
know? I was talking to Phillips about it the other day because,
yeah.
You know, Phillips has been rooting for the Astros because he now works for the Astros and he's hoping that Bolts gets a second ring. But
yeah.
So that's not in the cards right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they got eliminated last night. But Matt Bolts, great guy, man.
Yeah.
Great guy. Fantastic engineer. And, you know, some of my favorite of the old Pat and Ron clips that we have involve whenever Boltsy would bust out laughing in the background. That was always my favorite details about those classic Pat and Ron clips are when Bolts loses it. And I used to get texts from him and stuff, or emails from him saying, hey, man, there's some crazy, if you weren't listening, here's some crazy stuff that went down in the booth. So, all right, Boltsy, here we go.
That garlic gets me every time.
He's not going to say it. I think he's refusing to say it, Dan.
He must be feuding with me or something.
Wait a minute now.
The wind beneath my wings.
He's avoiding it. Come on now, Fartula.
Smell my fear.
It is literally...
We don't get that one. We don't get the smell my fear a lot.
No, that one doesn't happen. What's that? In heavy rotation. There you go. Victory for Dan. All right, let's hear one more from
Dan. I'm leaving. See ya. I'm done. My weekend
started. That's all. My weekend is ready to go, man.
Good luck with the next 2 hours.
And finally.
That one rattled my bowl.
Look at that. We got to
make it up for lost time.
There you go. All right, guys. I like having these guys sitting next to me. If you've not seen them, I believe we put pictures up on the on the website.
By the way, 708 is wondering where the scary sound CD is.
Oh, we're gonna have to get that. You know what? I will do that. We'll do that Monday. We'll track through. Remind me. We'll track through the scary sound CD on Monday for the screaming guy, and then we can always have I remember the first time that Gary Lee Wright and I played that because it's like 2.5 minutes long of just a guy screaming. And I remember the phone lines were lit up, and people were like, what the hell is going on? We'll get back into that. All right. All right, are we ready to hear some spooky urban legends? These are creepy urban legends in every state. Every state has their urban legends or their ghost stories. And if you've listened to this time slot for the many, many years of overnight radio, dating all the way back to Eddie Schwartz and Richard Crowe, the late, great Richard Crowe, would come on during this time period a few times during the overnights and share some of the great ghost stories of the Chicagoland area. And when I saw this story, this link about the creepiest urban legends for every state, I thought for sure Illinois, it would be Resurrection Mary. But it is not. It is not Resurrection Mary, which surprises me because I think that's got to be, Dan, that's got to be the most popular ghost story in this area.
I would have gone with that one.
Yeah. Well, here's what they went with. For Illinois, here's your creepy urban legend. Illinois, it's the Italian Bride. The Italian Bride. Of which my Dana DiLorenzo, my future ex-wife, falls under that category. Why it's creepy. An elaborate marble statue of a woman in a wedding dress is bound to stand out in a cemetery as it is, but that's not what's driven the Italian Bride to be the subject of local fascination. Upon closer inspection, there is an actual photo plaque on the gravesite of a woman in a casket looking perfectly preserved, even though, as an inscription notes, the photo was taken 6 years after burial, after the body was exhumed. Reports of unusual activity cover everything from the smell of fresh flowers near the gravesite in the dead of winter to the ghostly figure of a woman in white roaming the cemetery and the nearby halls of Proviso West High School in the dead of night. Ooh. Anybody go to Proviso West? You ever see the Italian Bride floating around? Give us a call, 312-981-7200. And also, if you want to jump in with urban legends that you've heard, we would love to hear from them. We're going to have some creepy urban legends. It's the Halloween time. We like to talk about stuff like this. Where it came from in 1921, recently married Julia Bucola Peta died and was buried in her wedding dress. Legend has it that her mother immediately began experiencing nightmares that Julia was demanding her grave be reopened. The source of the distress varies depending on the storyteller, often relating to some sort of disconnect with Julia's new husband. And what isn't in dispute is that 6 years later, the mother got her wish, and Julia's pristine condition inspired her to raise funds for the statue that's been creeping out generations ever since. Ooh. So the Italian Bride is for Illinois. How about Indiana? You want to hear what Indiana? Any of our Indiana folks? It's Diana of the Dunes. Oh, Diana of the Dunes. Oh. Along the shores of Lake Michigan, fishermen, vacationers, and other passersby have reported sightings of Diana, a ghostly nude female apparition floating along the shoreline and eventually disappearing into the water without a trace. Here's where it came from. Fishermen first started reporting the sightings of a woman skinny dipping in the waters off of Indiana's Lake Michigan coastline in 1916, and that's because Alice Gray, the source of the Diana legend, was still very much alive at that point. The exact circumstances that caused her to live a reclusive life in a lakeside shack aren't entirely clear, but the years that followed saw her marry a man who later became a murder suspect and then die an early death. Her ghostly presence has been the subject of local lore ever since. Oh! Now, if her name was Alice, why is she Diana of the Dunes? Because it sounds better. It's a better alliteration. Is that what it is? Because it doesn't.
Probably.
Alice of the Dunes doesn't quite have the same. Doesn't have quite the same ring. Here's Paul on WGN. Hey, Paul.
Good morning.
Morning.
I was a 1977 graduate of Proviso West, and what you were talking about, I've never really heard that. I have heard about Hillside, though. The Hillside has more dead people than alive because of all the cemeteries.
Oh, well, yeah. Hillside does have a lot of cemeteries. They really do. They really do. That's true.
The population is more dead than alive.
Yeah.
I've heard that for years.
Yeah, that's true. But you've never heard of the Italian Bride floating around in the high school?
Never heard it, never seen it.
Okay. All right, Paul, thanks for the report, buddy.
Thank you.
All right, take care. All right. All right, let's see. You hit the wrong button, Vic. You got me. So, anyway, that's Indiana, the Diana of the Dunes. So, if you want to, let's skip over to Wisconsin. Let's see what's going on in Wisconsin. Let's see. It's the Rhinelander Hodag. The Rhinelander Hodag. The Rhinelander Hodag. That's your creepy, scary urban legend in Wisconsin. The Hodag is a small creature that is simultaneously a frightening demon and comically covered in spikes. It's often portrayed as being dog-sized, but early reports said it could grow to 6 feet long. A 1928 legend describes the Hodag as having the head of a frog, saber-toothed tiger-like fangs, thick legs with large claws, the back of a plated dinosaur, and a long tail with spears on the end. Good Lord! So I'll tell you more about the Rhinelander Hodag after we take a break. So we'll take a break, and that's the Wisconsin urban legend. More coming up. Welcome back, everybody. How's it going? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here on a Friday morning. Fly Jams Friday. Yeah, straight out of context, you big dummy. Nick D Show Spies all coming up, and we're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive. And also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. So we've been talking about creepy urban legends from every state. And we talked about Illinois and Indiana, and we mentioned before the break that the Wisconsin urban legend, and if you guys are from Wisconsin or Indiana or anywhere and you want to jump in with your urban legends or scary stories, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. It's the Rhinelander Hodag, and it's a legend that sometimes it's dog sized, sometimes it could grow up to 6 feet long, and the Hodag is having the head of a frog, saber-toothed tiger-like fangs, thick legs with large claws, a back of a plated dinosaur, and a long tail with spears at the end. Despite its hellspawn swagger, it was never much of a threat to humans outside of its powerful skunk perfume stench. I've never heard this before. I've never heard this one. Here's where it comes from. The Green Devil was discovered in 1893 by developer Eugene Shepherd and almost instantly became a fixture of North Wisconsin folklore. 3 years later, Shepherd claimed he caught another and put it on display at the 1896 County Fair, Oneida County Fair, and he had knocked it out with chloroform, so of course it was sleeping. But he had wires hooked up to the fake animal to make it move occasionally. Word spread fast, and the Smithsonian sent a reporter to look at the Hodag. Shepherd quickly admitted it was a fraud. Rhinelander never let it go, though. It's the high school mascot, and there are multiple statues of the beast around town. In Rhinelander? Really? Dan, is there a picture? If you like Google Rhinelander Hodag, it's a high school mascot? That's pretty crazy. That's a complicated costume to wear, and it might actually rival Gritty.
Oh, man.
Oh, what does it look like?
It looks like a lizard crossed with a vampire and with pointy horns. And so there's the mascot. In one illustrious picture, he's dunking. In another one, he's fighting for a ball against the neighboring team's mascot, so obviously using his skills for fighting. But there's that. He's the mascot, but there's also a picture in front of somebody. Like, there's a sculpture of it.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
That's insane.
It's huge. It's really huge. And Rhinelander, Wisconsin, the heart of Hodag country, is what they're saying. Yeah, there's a big sculpture of it in the Hodag statue. Wow. That thing is pretty cool. I like that. I have never. How have I never heard of this before?
Yeah.
Anybody from Rhinelander? What do we got? Wisconsinites out there? 312-981-7200. And there are statues everywhere. There's this big one though, Dan, in front of whatever it is. That's fantastic.
It's a heck of a piece of art.
It really is. Wow, the Hodag, Rhinelander High School, and the Hodag is on the big Rhinelander High School sign. Like, there's a bunch of students been taking a picture of the high school. The gymnastics team is in front of the Rhinelander High School, and the big Hodag is on the sign. That's cool. Wow. Okay. So you learned something new. I gotta go now. I want to go to Rhinelander, just hang out and wait for the Hodag to show up.
He's festive. He wears a Santa's hat during Christmas time.
They put a Santa hat on him?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's see. How about Iowa? You ready to hear what's going on?
I'm sorry, before we go.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
There is a lady at a Packers game who's wearing a Hodag hat, which is a red hat, and the arms go from the side of the hat, and then his face is right above the bill. And then that Hodag is wearing a cheese head.
So they put a cheese head on the Hodag.
Right, on the Hodag hat.
On the Hodag hat. There you go. That's a fun character right there. I'm enjoying that. Rhinelander, Wisconsin. All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us with your urban legends and your other stories. How about Iowa? You want to hear what's going on in Iowa? Creepy urban legends. Ooh. Oh, wait, we have a Hodag call? Oh, let's go to the Hodag call. Hodag Central, this is what it is. There's Paul on WGN.
This is Paul from Waukesha.
Hi, Paul.
We see them commercials all the time for the tourism of Rhinelander.
Is that right?
Yeah, they show the statue, and they talk about people hunting it and trying to find it.
So it's a big thing.
Yeah, almost every month you see a commercial for it.
Wow. Okay. I love it, man. I do. I think it's great. Yeah. I think it's great. I can't believe I didn't know about this beforehand. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Thank you, Paul. There you go.
Bye.
Get to see commercials for the Hodag in northern Wisconsin, Dan. Sounds fun. Tell you what, it's better than the political commercials that I've been seeing. That I've been seeing every 40 seconds.
Make a lovely day trip for you and Dana.
Yeah. I'm sure Dana would love to go up to Wisconsin
actually,
and see the Hodag. You know what? She probably would.
She would.
She would. how about Iowa? It's the Villisca Axe Murder House. Ooh. Ooh. That sounds appropriately creepy. The Villisca Axe Murder House. And it's creepy because it's an axe murder house. Here's where it came from. So the murders themselves are very much not an urban legend. They happened, and they remain unsolved. Sometime between the evening of June 9th, 1912, and the morning that followed, six members of the Moore family and two house guests were brutally murdered, with each victim having suffered an axe wound to the head. One suspect was tried twice and never convicted, surprising no one. The somehow still standing house is the subject of numerous rumors, legends, and reports of paranormal activity. You can find out for yourself because you can actually stay there. Just like the ghost hunter who mysteriously stabbed himself in the chest there in 2014. Ooh. So you could stay in the axe murder house? You know, I got to tell you something, Dan. For as much as I love horror movies, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And as much as I love scary, scary stuff, you couldn't pay me to stay in that house. You know you could not pay. And here's another thing I just want to mention. And Marcus Leshock was talking about this. Have you seen this coffin challenge that they're doing at Six Flags?
Oh, yeah.
What the hell is that? So I'm not sure what the the thing is, people you can lay in a coffin,
right?
And it's closed. You're in the coffin, and it's closed. You're in the coffin, and it's like 30 hours. If you spend 30 hours in the coffin,
something like that, yeah.
You win two guest season passes and $300. No. You basically, what are you getting paid? $10 an hour to lay in a to lay in a coffin. That's not enough. But I saw a picture of Marcus laying in one of the coffins at Fright Fest. You couldn't pay me to do that either. I'm not going to stay in a murder house. You kidding me? You know, it's the you're in a one of the reasons I love horror movies and stuff is because like you either watch them in the safety of your own home, okay? Or you're in a movie theater with other people, a public place, and you know it's a facade. I'm not going instant going into a murder house. There's no way I'm going into a not let alone an axe murder house. And then some ghost hunter stabbed himself. That's not something that anybody needs to do. So if you're in Iowa or you've been to Iowa or you're from Iowa and you know about the axe murder house, have you stayed there? 312-981-7200. Oh my God. All right. We have more creepy urban legends from every state. And if you want to request a state, perhaps you're from another state and you would like to know what their creepy urban legend is. We got some great creepy urban legends. It's Halloween time, so we're sharing some creepy stuff. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text if you want to jump in on any of this stuff. And we'll talk more creepy urban legends, which we when we come back from the break after the news. All right. Welcome back, everyone. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. It's Friday, so all the regular Friday features will be coming up in a little bit here. And that's Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, You Big Dummy, and Fly Jam Friday. We are talking about some creepy urban legends. It's Halloween time, and we're talking about the creepiest urban legend in every single state. And, yeah, by the way, we just, Dan, somebody just posted... on our show page, Nick DiGilio show page, Daniel, who says, I'm listening from Israel. Thank you, Daniel. And then he also says, I see ghosts, especially after smoking a few joints. is pot legal in Israel?
That is a good question. Yeah. Hopefully not for his case.
Yeah. Canada, he can go to Canada now and blow weed all day long. Did you see that they are actually, I just saw this, Dan, that they are selling Toronto Maple Leaf jerseys with the pot leaf.
Oh, very nice.
Instead of the Maple Leaf. And actually, they're selling Canadian flags with the pot leaf instead of the Maple Leaf.
Very nice. I mentioned earlier that our friends from Buffalo are in town, Aaron and Emily, and they live in just 10 minutes over the border, to the point where Buffalo residents of Buffalo, their ID allows them to go into Canada because it's that close.
Is that right?
Yeah, without like a full passport. Obviously, you have to have a special ID, but it allows them to think. And the bridge that connects them is called the Peace Bridge. So obviously, this was a very big story in the local market, and there was a lot of jokes about people who would just walk up to the Peace Bridge and just start smelling on the American side.
Yeah, man. You can go to Canada and blow weed and not worry about getting thrown into the clink.
And then go to Tim Hortons, eh?
And go to Tim Hortons, eh? Yeah. Yeah, well, that's you'd spend a lot of money at Tim Hortons if you blew a bunch of weed. Now, if you're just tuning in, one of the urban legends that we've been talking about, the scary urban legend we've been talking about, how did the Rhinelander Hodag not come into my consciousness until now? How is that possible? Vic, did you know about the Rhinelander Hodag?
No, I'm not familiar with it.
The creature that we were talking about? It seems to be it's a mascot. It's the team mascot. Here's another couple of Hodag related texts. 262 area code says the Hodag statue is outside of the tourism info building. So they really embrace this thing. It's outside of that statue that is fantastic. It's beautiful. And 708 area code says, are Rhinelander school dances called Hodag Hoedowns? Oh, look at that now. Hold it a minute.
All right. Before we get too far away, 262, did Canada change its national anthem to O Cannabis?
Can't remember what late night, one of the late, because you know the late night hosts are covering this. And one of me, somebody said, oh, cannabis. Well, I can't remember which one, because I watch a bunch of the late night. You know, it actually could have been James Corden, because I actually watched James Corden yesterday morning. And the only reason, because I can't stand James Corden, the only reason I watched, Jamie Lee Curtis was on. So, of course, there's no way I'm not going to watch something with Jamie Lee Curtis on it. She's as feisty and crazy as ever, Jamie Lee Curtis. You know? She's crazy.
Glad to hear that.
She's feisty and crazy. Speaking of feisty and crazy, Dana DiLorenzo is going to be in town. Over the weekend, I'm going to hang out with her. All right. If anybody wants to know what state their biggest urban legend, their creepiest urban legend. Now, Vic, where are you? You're originally from California, right, Vic?
Yes.
Would you like to know the urban legend? Oh,
yeah, actually.
The California
urban
legend?
Oh, let me guess. Well, no.
Okay, no, take a guess.
Okay, does it have anything to do with the Winchester Mansion?
No.
Okay.
Here's what
it's a big state. I took a shot.
I can't blame you for taking a shot. Because I thought Illinois, because, you know, have you ever heard of Resurrection Mary, Vic?
Vandeveld? No, I haven't. No. She comes in every morning at 4:15.
No, not Resurrection Mary Vandeveld. No, that's not what we're talking about.
The traffic reporter? Okay.
I don't know why I find that's what I'm going to call her from now on. I'm going to call her Resurrection Mary Vandeveld. It's better than what Spike used to call her. Remember what Spike used to call her?
No.
VD.
I do remember that. She told me.
Yeah.
Accurate, technically.
And was it Spike? Yeah, Spike. Yeah, Spike used to call her VD. No, here's what the California urban legend is, Vic. The many horrors of Turnbull Canyon. Located near L.A. between Whittier and City of Industry, Turnbull is a 49,000-acre smorgasbord of nightmare fuel set amid the scenic hills. You want your scares rooted in Americana, in American history, the natives call it Hootunknugma, or the place of the devil, where the ghosts of those slain for not converting to Christianity dwell alongside witches and Satanists who reportedly use the place to sacrifice children whose spirits now walk the canyon and dangle from trees. Good Lord! They're joined by the ghosts of 21 kids who perished in a plane crash back in 52, allegedly, as there's no existing record of it. Then there's the remains of the old insane asylum that came back to life to kill a teen in the 60s via a long dormant electrical wire. There are cults, alien encounters, gravity hills, it goes on and on and on. Basically, if it's something that gets under your skin, there's a story about it happening in this seemingly cursed canyon. So where it comes from, the place's evil vibes date back centuries, though it wasn't until the site was established as a fur trapping site in 1845 that things started to get really intense. The word of the site's terrors travel far and wide, making it a place visited as much for its beauty as its morbid curiosity.
That makes sense now, actually.
Have you ever been to Turnbull Canyon?
No, but when we used to go playing, my mom, when we would run out of the house, she would say, don't go dilly-dallying at the Turnbull Canyon. And
is that right?
No.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I was going to say.
Yes. I never heard of it.
The Turnbull Canyon. Boy, man, that's crazy. That's about as crazy as it gets right there. All of those stories? My God. Wow. Hey, Arkansas, you ready for Arkansas, Dan?
Yes.
Oh, it's the dog boy. Can he hang out with the hodag? Would the hodag hang out with the dog boy?
Who'd win in that fight?
The name sounds kind of goofy, but if you find yourself at 65 Mulberry Street in the middle of the minuscule Arkansas town of Quitman, you won't laugh if you see the hulking outline of a 300-pound half-man, half-beast complete with glowing animal eyes glaring out of the windows. Walk quickly, as he's known to chase people down the street, biting at their heels, kind of like a dog. Where this thing came from, this is actually the rare urban legend, where the story behind the story ends up being even creepier than the folklore. Gerald Bettis, the only son of the Bettis family of 65 Mulberry, was always a problem child, but not in the cute Junior Healy kind of way. Bettis would collect and torture animals, hence the dog boy moniker, before turning his sociopathic force to his elderly parents, allegedly imprisoning them in their own home and potentially even murdering them. Eventually, Bettis would be in prison for growing marijuana on his back porch and would die in a penitentiary in 1988 of a drug overdose. Boy, that's creepy. The dog boy. That's a very, you know, that's a really innocuous name for such a scary story, man. Oh, the dog boy. It's the dog boy. Didn't we find out the other night that Benicio del Toro played a dog boy?
That was his first role.
That's right. All right, how about this one? New Jersey, you ready? There's a lot of creepy stuff in New Jersey. You ever watch the Jersey Shore? Hold on a minute. There you go.
All right.
That's on again, right? Didn't they do like a reunion
thing?
Yeah,
they're doing like a, I don't know if it's a full-scale reboot or something, but yeah, they're back on TV.
And it's
the
all
ones that aren't in jail. Because I think the situation was busted for tax evasion recently.
He was, wasn't he? Yeah. The situation. All right, so Jersey, it's The Watcher. The Watcher. I remember when I was in high school, Disney released a horror movie. Dan, you might want to look this one up. It was there. It was like a Walt Disney. It was rated PG, and it was a horror movie, and it was called The Watcher in the Woods. And I'm trying to remember who was in it. I think maybe Betty Davis was in it. It was a legendary older actress was in it, The Watcher in the Woods. And it was like a PG-rated Disney studio release. And it was not scary at all. I'm trying to remember who else was in it, but I think it was somebody like Betty Davis. If it wasn't Betty Davis, it was somebody like Betty Davis. And I want to say it came out like in 81.
It was Betty Davis.
It was Betty Davis, okay. And it was 81?
80.
80. And who were the other people in it? There were some younger, was there a Holly named Holly?
Person? Lynn Holly Johnson.
There it is, Lynn Holly Johnson. You know who, you know who Lynn Holly Johnson was? It? You know what she was in, Dan?
What was that?
Ice Castles with Robbie Benson.
Oh.
She played the blind girl that Robbie Benson yelled at while she was trying to ice skate. Are there any other stars involved in The Watcher in the Woods? Yeah, Disney's attempt at horror didn't work out very well.
Let's see here. Kyle Richards, Carol Baker, David McCollum, Benedict Taylor.
Wow.
By the way, Robin Baumgartner did a Ice Castles Met Robbie Benson shout out the other day.
Did she?
They were doing a story on the world's oldest figure skater. She's like 89 or 93 or something crazy, and you know, still goes out,
still going, still
the
skating
outfit, and gets, yeah, you know, does twirls and things like that. The whoever was doing the production work was doing a fine job, because he played one of the songs from Ice Castles underneath the bed, and it was lost on most people, but not Robin.
She got it.
She got it and talked about how wonderful Robbie Benson's eyes were.
It is women of a certain age that I think still have that thing for Robbie Benson.
By the way, Trucker Rich says Mary Vanderbilt's nickname should be Refrigerator Mary Vanderbilt.
Oh, yeah. Well, that came up yesterday on my segment. I don't know if you heard about this, Dan.
No.
You know, every Thursday morning, I'm happy to do a 6:20 a.m. segment with the Steve Cochran gang. And Steve said that a listener texted or something about me, and I should do something obscene with a Butterfinger. They're not a fan of mine. And I wasn't sure what I was like. Why specifically a Butterfinger? And he goes, well, I don't know. Were you talking about Halloween candy yesterday? And I'm like, no. Somebody wanted something. I should have done something with a Butterfinger. And then a different text said that Andrea complained on Patty's show about Mary throwing away her Tupperware. Because, you know, she's like the refrigerator cleaner. And then and so Cochran says to me, has Mary ever thrown anything of yours away? I said, no, I don't bring anything because I know she's going to throw it away. I never put anything into the refrigerator because I know she comes in every morning and tosses everything. And then Mary says, yeah, I threw out your beer. And I'm like, I haven't had beer in over 3 years. And so that's not the case. And then who was it who said, I have Greek food that looks like it's spoiled, so don't throw it out? I can't remember. But anyway, we got into this whole conversation about Mary in the refrigerator. So, yeah, that makes sense. Just don't leave anything in there for longer. I mean, she claimed yesterday during the segment, Dan, I'm just going to stop doing it then. I'm not going to patrol the fridge anymore.
Please don't, Mary. Oh, my God. You want an urban legend. That's where it's going to start.
She's going to find a hodag in there. All right. Why don't we break here and then come back? We got more urban legends. Hey, if you're from a certain state and you'd like to hear what your scariest urban legend is from that state, I don't think anybody can top California. That's the most terrifying thing I've ever heard in my life. And as far as creatures go, the hodag. Come on now. Oh, we got to hear that. I bet a bit. Which one is going to chupacabra? Would that be New Mexico?
I think it's New Mexico.
Yeah. The chupacabra rules. Okay, scary urban legends and much more.
Look into my eyes. Gotcha.
There you go. Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. All the regular Friday features are coming up. If you want to get your requests for Fly Jams Friday, get them in. 312-981-7200. And that's also the number for talk and text. And we're talking about creepy urban legends from across the country. And if you come from a specific state or want to know what the urban legend is in a certain state, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Now, before the break, I mentioned New Jersey and The Watcher. That's the creepy urban legend from New Jersey. If you don't know the details, in the summer of 2015, a young family moved into a million-dollar house in Westfield, New Jersey. Soon after, they started getting letters signed by someone only IDing themselves as The Watcher, claiming it was his duty to watch over the house, while also spouting crazy lines like, quote, do you need to fill the house with the young blood I requested? And who has the bedrooms facing the street? Where it came from, is this a prank based off of a weirdly accepted local legend? Is it a media hoax? A way to drive down real estate prices? It's impossible to know, but it feels very weird. And somebody is still sending letters to the inhabitants of the house. The debate and skepticism still burn in the creepiest corners of the internet. While it's a fairly new legend, it's probably one of the scariest entries on the list, no matter what you believe. That's really creepy. You know? That's really, really creepy. Ugh. Wow. Have you heard that one before, Dan?
I had, because there was a bunch of news stories about it.
Yeah, I vaguely remember it. I just didn't know it was still happening.
That I didn't realize either.
Man. That is really creepy. That's way creepy. All right, how about Michigan? We didn't do Michigan. How could I forget Michigan is a surrounding lovely place that we all go to? How about that? Boy, it's got a good name, I'll tell you, Dan. Michigan's urban legend is Hell's Bridge. Hell's Bridge. Okay, why is it creepy? The Nain Rogue and Dogmen? They've got nothing on the tale of Elias Frisky, a deranged old preacher who, according to blood-curdling lore, took a group of tethered children into the woods where what is now Algoma Township. He slaughtered them one by one, casting them into Cedar Creek before being caught by their parents and hanged, but not before he was possessed by demons. In its current form, Hellbridge is a creaky, narrow metal footbridge in the middle of the woods, where those brave enough to cross at night claim to hear voices and screams of children and are sometimes greeted by a black figure with glowing eyes as they traverse it. There is no record, by the way, this is where it came from, of Elias Frisky in the area, though there are a prominent Frisky family beginning in the 1910s. Still, despite the lack of hard facts, anyone who's visited the bridge will attest that there's something out there, and it usually makes its presence known as you're teetering on a shaky metal bridge in the moonlight. Again, no. No, I will not be crossing that bridge. Thank you. You know, if I ever went on those tours with Richard Crowe, I'd be a real wuss. We went on a ghost tour in New Orleans, my ex-wife and I, my first wife, because our honeymoon, we went to Memphis and New Orleans. And so we went on a haunted tour. We went on a graveyard tour. And then we went on like a haunted tour, and they took us to a bunch of haunted places. And the guy, and the tour guide was really good too. He was like, if you listen closely, like we were in a restaurant. It was like an Indian restaurant, and they said that the upstairs was haunted. So we walked in to this restaurant, and it smelled so good. Like the food smelled so good that the next night, my ex-wife and I went there to eat. Because we walked in, it was like, oh my God, does the food smell good? And then they take us upstairs, and they're like, if you listen closely, you can hear a creep. And I didn't hear anything. But the guy did a good job. You know, the guy did a good job. It was like that church that we went to, St. Micah's Church in Dublin. And we touched the mummies, because they have the mummies in that church. You can't touch them anymore. And Dan, you know that I'm responsible for the Hawks winning the Stanley Cup that year.
I remember that, yeah.
Because we went in 2010. I had my Hawks hat on. And it's supposed to be good luck if you touch the mummies in the basement of the church in Dublin. And we went, and I rubbed my Hawks hat on one of the mummies, and they won the Stanley Cup. I have no explanation for 13 and 15, how they did it then. I think it was residual mummy. That's what it was when they won. All right. Residual mummy. I was in that band with Cochran. Yeah! All right. Take a break for the news. All right. Hello. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios, 18 lovely stories above lovely downtown Chicago. We're here till 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude every weekday morning, 1 to 5 a.m. It is Friday, so that means Fly Jams Friday. You big dummy. Straight out of context, Nick D. Show Spies. All the regular Friday features shall commence soon. And remember, when we're doing the You Big Dummies stories, after we do the recap, you call in at 312-981-7200. First person through is going to be our third vote on who is the biggest dummy. So that's all coming up right here on WGN. We've been talking about creepy urban legends. Ooh! From each state. And if you want to know of a specific state, 312-981-7200, if you would like to join us here. So I will not be crossing Hell's Bridge in Michigan. Dan, don't ask me.
No problem.
All right. Here's one that I found. I find the name kind of interesting. In Mississippi, it's the Three-Legged Lady of Nash Road. The Three-Legged Lady of Nash Road. I believe I dated her. Hold on a minute. Now hold it second. Now hold it. This is in Mississippi. Here's the reason why it's creepy. Whenever a strange person starts chasing your car as you drive down a dark, unfamiliar road, it's unsettling. When she bangs on your hood, it's even worse. But when she has three legs, and one seems to be a rotting limb she sewed on her body, that's just the worst. But that's what generations of people in Mississippi have said about the stretch of Nash Road near Columbus where the lady does her thing. Here's where it came from. Some say the extra leg was removed from a dead lover and attached to her body. Some believe she's the ghost of a mother who got lost searching for her dismembered daughter after all she could find was a severed leg. Some say she wants to race you across a nearby bridge. Either way, turn off your headlights on a stretch of the road and don't be surprised if you're forced to confront the specter yourself. She sounds scary. The Three-Legged Lady of Nash Road. How about Missouri, Dan? You ready for Missouri?
Yes.
I like this one already. Can I just... Maybe somebody who's living in Missouri knows this one. Because this is just outside of St. Louis. So if you're in St. Louis, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. It's simply called Zombie Road. See, now I might like this one. The dark canopied trail through Wildwood, Missouri, which is just outside of St. Louis, has been a hotbed of creepy tales for ages, often revolving around shadowy human figures following and frightening those along the trail. This is where it came from. Originally built as an access road for the gravel quarries along the Merrimack River, the road fell into disuse and disrepair in the 70s and saw an increase in teenagers flocking to the area to party and scare the crap out of each other. The origin stories of the trail's haunting varies wildly, from the kind that are plausible, railway accidents, executed Civil War spies, and more sensational, sadistic children's hospital. Several years ago, the pathway was paved so it might be used as a bike path, but that doesn't done much to slow down the legend. Police are doing their best, however. So Zombie Road, that's where you go to party, right? It's, hey, man, let's go down to Zombie Road and blow some weed. But there was not one mention of a zombie in the explanation. That's false advertising. Trying to attract people like me who happen to love zombies. You get to Zombie Road and there's no zombies. Like, well, hey.
Get out of Better Business Bureau that's of Missouri.
Right. That's right. Of Wildwood, Missouri. You go there, stay, hang out there for like a half an hour with a bunch of 15-year-olds partying, looking around, going, where are the zombies? No, man, there are no zombies, man. We just got some beer and some pot. No zombies. That stuff. No, man, that was very disappointing. I was very disappointed by that. Okay. How about this one? North Dakota, quite simply called the Gates of Hell. The Gates of Hell. By the way, the Gates of Hell, fantastic zombie movie. I don't know. Lucio Fulci? You ever heard of Lucio Fulci?
I have not.
Lucio Fulci was a phenomenal Italian gore director who has made some of the goriest Italian horror films of all time, lots of zombie movies and stuff. He made a movie called Zombie, which is one of the goriest movies you'll ever see, but he also made Gates of Hell, which has really got an insane scene where a woman vomits up her entire insides. It's a scene that goes on for seemingly 5 hours. It's like, okay, enough already, Lucio. Abandoned towns are generally creepy, and North Dakota has an abundance of settlements that were all but abandoned after the railroad boom. Tagus, though, takes the cake due to the little fact that the people believe that it once housed a Lutheran church that doubled as a hotbed for Satan worship. Legend is it burned down, but if you stand in just the right place, you can hear the screams of the damned bubbling up from hell itself. There are also reports of hellhounds, glowing gravestones, and a ghost train. Vandals and revelers have made the few people who call Tagus home very wary of visitors. And Lord knows that the combination of a rumored portal to hell and extremely unwelcoming locals in a small town is a boilerplate for a horror movie fodder. Where the legend comes from, the Satanism business dates back to the Satanic Panic of the 80s. What? Did I miss something, Dan? Was there a Satanic Panic in the 80s?
Apparently so.
What? Though Tagus has been spooky since it was found in 1900, but ever since the late 80s, when hundreds of high schoolers turned up for vandalism-intensive Halloween party, were run out of a ghost town. Visitors have not met with extreme skepticism. The city's last church burned to the ground in 2001. Okay. Here's one that doesn't sound very scary. Ohio, melon heads. That's the creepy urban legend. Melon heads. It sounds like something stale your granny might pick up in the candy dish, but it's actually a legend about pale, sickly, genetically altered children with giant heads and razor-sharp teeth that simply love to kill. Where did it come from? Riffs on the Table also exists in Michigan and Connecticut. So this Ohioan case isn't very compelling. The melon heads haunt the woods of Kirkland. So does that mean that they haunt Costco? Hold on a minute now. See, because if you go to Kirkland is the Costco brand that they carry of items. I went a long way for that joke for no reason.
I thought it too. I mean,
yeah. When you hear Kirkland, what's the first thing you think of?
A Costco.
Yeah, exactly. So those melon heads haunt the woods of Kirkland and are apparently the adopted children of an unscrupulous doctor who used the pre-melon heads and used them to test new medical and surgical methods with not so great results. In some versions of the tale, the kids are more likely to scurry away like chipmunks than bite your face off. In others, they're just ghosts of kids. One thing is certain, they definitely inspired one very campy, hyper-local horror movie. Wait, what horror movie? Is there a movie called Melonheads? Because at the end here, it says they definitely inspired one very campy, hyper-local horror movie. I have never heard of Melonheads. Melonhead is what I used to call John Cougar. I used to, instead of Melon Camp, I called him Melonhead just because I'm a jerk, even though I like John Cougar Melonhead. Melonheads. I don't know. If maybe they made a movie out of it.
But, yeah, it looks like 2011.
Come on.
Low indie budget type thing.
And it's called Melonheads?
Yes.
What do they say? What's the plot? Does it say?
Diane Clark is a researcher looking for truth of Allegan, Michigan's local Melonhead legend, pairing up with a local man, Joe Dobson, to attempt down to track down the monsters.
Mm. I'm going to have to rent that along with Frankenstein and Me. Dust off my VCR.
It's a great double feature.
Melonheads and Frankenstein and Me. Oh man. And I'm curious because, you know, I love that the person texted in the other day that, hey, Frankenstein and Me is a good movie. I have it on Laserdisc. Hey, you know what, you know, Dan, that Jim Liskowski works in a thrift store every once in a while.
Right.
And someone brought in to the thrift store, someone brought in a beta copy of Starman. So Jim gave it to me. It's in our office. I don't know when we're going to get a chance to watch it, though, Dan.
Hopefully one day.
John Carpenter's Starman on beta. That's in our office. It's in our office. I hope nobody steals it now.
You know? Way to put it out there, man.
Oh, man. Oh, man. Now all the co-workers are going to be like, we got to get hold of the Starman on beta.
Unless Mary Vandeville throws it out.
Okay, we're going to end on this one. West Virginia, the Mothman. Now, let me explain something to you. Dan, have you seen the Mothman Prophecies?
I have.
That's a scary-ass movie. That's a really creepy, scary movie. Richard Gere, Laura Linney, Will Patton, with an unbelievable ending. Like an insane ending. If you've not seen it, hey, listen, it's horror film time. You know what I mean? We're Halloween. It's October. You watch scary movies. You want to watch a scary movie? It's a scary movie, don't you think, Dan?
Oh, yeah, very much so.
Oh, my God. That's like my ex-wife, Heather, she can't watch that movie. It freaks her out so much. When she, you know, if it comes on cable, she'll try and watch it, but she can't. It totally freaks her out. But here's the Mothman. This is West Virginia. The Mothman was introduced to West Virginia in 1966 with the best newspaper headline ever. Quote, couples see man-sized bird creature something. From there, residents all over West Virginia reported seeing the winged, human-like, red-eyed creature all around the state, unsure if it was a demon, an alien, a genetic experiment gone wrong. And as recently as 2016, Mothman sightings have made the news, actual news. The myth dates back to the initial newspaper piece, but the legend has long been propagated in pop culture, inspiring a horror novel and a subsequent Richard Gere film adaptation. In Point Pleasant, where the original incident was recorded, there's a Mothman Museum, a Mothman Festival, and a sizable statue. The Mothman has become big business, if nothing else. He has clearly paved the way for the tabloid darling, the Bat Child. Bat Boy. Not the Bat Child. He's Bat Boy. Yeah, so if you listen, Mothman Prophecies. Scary. Very, very scary. All right, so those are some urban legends, man. And the Hodag. We've learned about the Hodag. I have to go check out Rhinelander to see the Hodag up close and personal. So, but I will not be crossing Hell's Bridge to do it. All right, let's take a break here. We've got weather, and after the weather and the break, we'll come back and all the regular features will start, and we will start with you, Big Dummy. Yeah. All right.
Here's the dummy. You big dummy. You big dummy. See what you did?
Oh, no, you big dummy.
You dummy.
Welcome back, everybody. All the regular features are coming up, and also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Well, right now it's time for you, Big Dummy. This is when we read real news stories about real dumb people doing real dumb stuff. And then we read them, and we vote on them, and that's the Dummy of the Week. And by the way, if you want to be a part of You Big Dummy, find a link to a funny news story about a dumb person, send it to nickdshow@gmail.com, say, I would like to read this on the air, Dan will hook it up, you'll be on the radio with us, and you get some Lou Malnati's pizza, so get to it, it's a win-win-win situation. Let's get started here. Dummy number one. Dummy number one. Number one. The leader of a burglary ring known as Willy Wonka has pleaded guilty to 60 charges. The Salem News reports that 47-year-old William Willy Wonka Rodriguez pleaded guilty Thursday to his role in crimes in Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, and Connecticut. It that netted more than $300,000 in property and currency. The Lawrence man was one of five people arrested in August during a police investigation dubbed Operation Golden Ticket. Rodriguez remains jailed on a $500,000 bail pending sentencing on November 7th, where he faces up to 12 years in prison.
And I can't wait to see you starring in your first movie.
Yeah.
Deep Dummy.
I'm not kidding you. You're a big dummy.
Dummy number two. Dummy number two. Number two. Officials in the Michigan city of Portland are pleading for Facebook users to stop sending them angry messages about the city of the same name in Oregon. City manager Tut Gorman posts, "We steadily receive highly inappropriate complaints and messages clearly not directed at our PPD and certainly not reflective of our residents." He said there was, quote, "an aggressive spike in complaints last week involving civil unrest and Antifa groups shutting down streets in Portland, Oregon." Chief of Police Star Thomas said the Facebook post hasn't yet stopped the influx of messages. Thomas said the Michigan city of about 4,000 residents is very clearly different from its Oregon counterpart, which boasts a population of nearly 650,000.
You bigger dummy than my dumb. Dummy!
Dummy number three, dummy number three, dummy number three. Police confiscated a man's sweater that read, "Call my lawyer," after arresting him. The Roanoke Times reports the 21-year-old was arrested in Sunday's burglary of Clean Souls. Police seized seven right foot Nike Air Jordans and a sweatshirt printed with "Call My Lawyer." Clean Souls operator Rob Wickman previously said he typically keeps right shoes on display while their other halves rest behind the counter. A warrant say police found a cash register behind the store along with a backpack containing merchandise worth $5,000 in the burglar's student ID. Despite the sweatshirt's instructions, it's unclear whether the man has a lawyer. So he stole just right shoes? He stole a bunch of just right foot shoes.
Get lost, dummy. Before this game, you were just a plain dummy. But after the night, you'd be a broke dummy.
Dummy number four, dummy number four. Okay, we have to break. We have to break. I'm sorry. Okay, we have to break. So let's do that. We got dummy number four and dummy number five. That'll be after the news, and then we will vote. And again, call in at 312-981-7200. If you're the first person through, you get to cast your vote on whether or not or on who the biggest dummy is. So get ready to do that. We'll break for the news, which is coming up after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. And it is a Friday, and as you can tell, we're doing our regular Friday features. We're in the middle of You Big Dummy. You Big Dummy! Straight out of context, Nick D Show spies, and then we'll jump into the funky stuff. DJ Shagru will spin some Fly Jams on Fly Jams Friday. That's all coming up here till 5 on this Friday morning. All right. Dummy number four. Dummy number four. Dummy four. A truck that lost its load of 22,000 metal grinding balls damaged a number of cars. Witnesses said the truck was going up a steep incline when the back of the vehicle came open. The 2-pound metal balls, which are used to grind down stones, fell out of the trailer and started rolling down the hill. Police said at least 6 cars were damaged by the balls, but no injuries were reported. The driver of the truck, which was had been destined for Salt Lake City, said he made a wrong turn and ended up on the steep road. Truck driver Robert Herman told KOMO-TV, "I know I saw them bouncing down. Nothing I can do right now till the police is finished with them." Herman was cited for failing to secure his load.
There's something for you right here. Want it. Dummies. Won't be long before we'll hear the pitter-patter of tiny dummies around the house.
Dummy number five. Dummy number five. Five? A Massachusetts man who police dubbed the Brazen Botanist has pleaded guilty. The Salem News reports that 43-year-old Joseph Gardner was sentenced Tuesday to 1 year in jail. Police say a man was seen at a doorbell camera taking hanging plants from a Salem home at around 1:30 a.m. on May 16th. Tips to police led them to Gardner's girlfriend's home, where they found the 3 missing plants. Police recovered the plants and returned them to their owner. Gardner was arrested in August.
I'll spell it for you. D-U-M-M-Y, period. I, period. Dummy.
All right. We have to vote. So let's do a recap here. This is a good week. It's a good week. Some of the details are pretty fantastic in these stories, I got to say. All right, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to recap the five dummies, and the first person through at 312-981-7200 is going to be our third vote. 312-981-7200, first person through, gets to vote. All right, dummy number one was the man nicknamed Willy Wonka, who got busted for a multi-state crime ring. We have the people who are confusing Portland, Michigan with Portland, Oregon. We got the guy who got his Call My Lawyer sweatshirt confiscated while getting arrested for stealing nothing but right foot shoes. And then we got the truck driver whose 22,000 metal grinding balls fell out of his back of his truck, damaged other cars. And the guy who stole plants, whose last name was Gardner. Okay. All right, Dan. Pretty solid week for dummies.
Yes, very much
so. Okay, what do we got?
All right, so they are not going to be my winner, but the names from the second story involving the other Portland, Michigan, fantastic names. Mm-hmm. Tut.
Yep.
And Star.
Right.
Obviously we've discussed many times in the past what is and what is not irony, but the fact a guy named Gardner stole plants.
Yep.
It's fantastic.
Yep. I stopped reading it because I was like, what? And I looked over at you and you were just shaking your head. Yes, Nick, yep. His name is Gardner.
Yep. I do appreciate the truck driver in four just being like, you know what, man? Nothing I could have done.
You could have secured your truck.
Well, but I could have done that. But after that, he's like,
whatever. I saw him bouncing.
But just the overwhelming evidence. We had a story a few weeks back about why there's only a right foot displayed at shoes, and it makes sense. But right. Still, the fact you don't go looking for the left, A, number one.
Yeah.
B, you had your student ID on you. And three, Call My Lawyer. Who has a sweater named Call My Lawyer?
Okay. All right. Well, there's your vote right there. All right. So Dan is voting for the goofball. And a Clean Soles, by the way, is a great name for a shoe shop, though, for a shoe store. All right, you guys, you get one person, first person in, gets to vote. 312-981-7200. You will cast the third vote. So the Willy Wonka thing is hilarious because his name is Willy Wonka, and the metal balls thing. I'm picturing that happening. And you know what, Dan, you know what I thought of immediately with the truck driver thing? And anytime we have like these weird sort of truck driver stories with the metal balls damaging other cars, I immediately think J.K. Simmons is going to show up and say, we covered it. but I, too, am going to go with the Call My Lawyer guy. Let's see what our listener will vote for. Mark, what are you voting for?
Hey, Nick, I think Willy Wonka is the best.
Oh, you're going with Willy Wonka, who got busted for his multi-state crime ring.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thanks for your vote, Mark. Thank you, buddy.
Hey, thanks, Nick.
There you go. That was our third vote, but our winner is the Call My Lawyer guy.
By the way, kudos to the cop on the name of the operation being Golden Ticket.
Golden Ticket. Absolutely. All right. Okay, cool. Shall we get started on the next Friday morning fiesta? I don't know what that means. And, so when I'm in your neighborhood, you better duck, because Ice Cube is crazy as F-bomb. As I leave, believe I'm stomping, but when I come back, boy, I'm coming straight out of context, context, context. Context, context. What's up? Tell them where you're from. Straight out of context, 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 context. That's right. It's time for Straight Out of Context. We do this every Friday. Here's the deal. You listen to this radio station 24/7. And whenever anybody at any time on any show says something that you can pull out of context and it sounds dirty and it makes you giggle, jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. Shall we begin, Dan?
We shall begin. Okay. And we shall begin with Peter Indicator. Heard this one of you.
And pay for the ultimate package. See, and I knew it, right? Didn't I say? Did I say that?
Yeah, you paused. I don't think you said it out loud, but you paused.
Yeah, because I mean, it's anytime you say package, you're going to end up in this segment. Mm-hmm. That's one of the many lessons we've learned from Straight Out of Context. Okay. Oh, do we have the break?
We got to go to Vic in the newsroom.
Okay, Vic.
Hey, guys, just some breaking traffic-related news. We have a shooting investigation on I-57. They've blocked down all lanes on the inbound side of I-57 at 127th Street. So what you want to do is go north on Halstead to 119th to re-enter onto I-57. We'll have the latest in our next report.
Okay. All right. Traffic stuff, we got an eye on that as well. And Vic's in the newsroom. Okay. So we are we're back. Are we ready again to roll?
We are. Peter in Decatur emailed this one of me. I will go number one.
Wait. What was that?
Was me voting for last week's.
Oh, that was you voting. You went number one.
Right.
Okay.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Okay.
Streamwood Carroll sent in this one of Rick Pearson.
I'm excited.
Oh. And I just can't hide it. All right.
Eric heard this one of Lisa Wolf.
It was my first time and I loved it.
Oh, boy. All right.
Jesse's responsible for the next couple ones. First up, Patty Vasquez.
I can't stop licking.
Did she say licking?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Then me. We'll see if we can get Jesse's in here.
Was that from last week again?
Yep.
Oh, my God. Okay.
And you?
You're doing it nationwide. Doing it nationwide.
Mm-hmm.
What was that?
Fantasy football.
Oh, that's what we were talking about. Yes. Mm-hmm. That was an innocent conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And me. The biggest poundage.
What was that?
We were talking about fantasy fly fishing.
Man, we're dominating this week.
We'll take a break, but the first one back is you again.
Oh,
so.
For God's sake. All right. So we're doing Straight Out of Context, everybody. We'll get back to it right after we break here for the weather and some commercials.
So when I'm in your neighborhood, you better duck, because Ice Cube is crazy as
F-bomb.
As I leave, believe I'm stomping, but when I come back, boy, I'm coming straight
out of context.
What's up?
Tell them where you're from.
Straight out of context.
That's right. Straight Out of Context continues. This is when you listen 24/7 to this station whenever anybody at any time says something you can pull out of context and it sounds dirty, jot it all down. Send it to nickdshow@gmail.com, and I guess I'm next, right?
You are correct. Ken from Hillside emailed this one of you.
By the way, I want you to know that she and V loved it. I honestly didn't expect her to like it.
Right.
We were talking about Phantasm.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. All right.
Ken from Hillside also sent in this one of Steve Cochran.
I love the fact that she was pretending to be embarrassed when she enjoyed every second of it.
All right.
Tom heard this one of Violetta Podramatic.
Whatever gets the job done.
Whoa. All right. Okay.
Streamwood Steve emailed this one of Lisa Wolf.
It only works once.
I don't know why. I have no idea why that one struck me so funny. That's hilarious. That's great. Okay.
Kevin from Lakewood sent in this one of Patty Vasquez.
Melt in your mouth meat.
Oh, God. All right.
Tim heard this one of Andrea Darlis.
So is the secret long and slow?
Oh, my God. Oh, man. See what happens when she hooks up with Patty?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
All right.
I'm coming from Cochran lesson.
No, yeah.
Paul and Peter in Decatur emailed this one of you.
Is it going down? Maybe the one in front of you can go down. That was from the other night, right? When Noah was here.
Yep.
Oh, man. And I knew it, too. Oh, okay.
And finally, Wild Bill sent in this one of you.
What's... I like living in the city that's the meat capital of the world.
Okay.
Wow, we dominated. Our show dominated
yes,
this
very
week.
Much
I mean,
so.
Completely. We didn't have one from Wendy.
That's true.
Have we ever gone a week without at least one from Wendy Snyder?
You know, she was off for the you know, her knee surgery and things like that.
Oh, right. Yeah, but she was on this week.
Yes.
That's weird, man. All right. Keep your ears peeled, everybody. Wendy's filthy.
And thereby, as we always like to remind people, there are some that are just too dirty.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah.
Or I can't get the right audio or various things happen. Yeah. But thank you all for submitting.
All of you guys for submitting. It's fantastic. So there you go. All right. Now, what about this?
Spies.
Hey.
Someone took your plans away. So what's all of us? There ain't nobody.
Spies.
Spies. Spies.
Like us.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, it's called Nick D Show Spies, and this is when you listen 24/7. Whenever anybody at any time mentions me or the show in any capacity, we want to know about it. You become a spy. Jot down the day, the time, who talked about us, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. Okay, what do we got?
Three clips this week.
Okay.
Our spies were Celine, Aaron and Aurora, Lake Geneva Dan, and Tim. Mm. The Steve Cochran Show was talking about the Price is Right stage show coming to town, and our guy Joe Romano mentioned your love of a certain game.
Oh. The Price is Right Live coming to the Chicago Theater Sunday, February 17th. Live interactive stage show giving you the chance to come on down and play classic games from the show. What's the best game ever on The Price is Right? It's a little one where the guy climbs the mountain.
Oh, yeah, the Alpine Climber. Yeah,
that's a pretty good one.
So they make a touring show out of The Price is Right? Is that the idea? It's not, it's not a live television taping.
No, everything's a touring show now.
Nick DiGilio loves that Yodeler game.
Is that what it is, the Yodeler?
Yeah, the Yodeler.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's a ticket.
No, it's called Cliffhangers. just want to clear it up. But yes, I do love the yodeling dude. But yeah, no, it's Cliffhangers. That's the name of the game. And that is the best. That's my favorite game. By the way, I want to mention this really quickly, and I've mentioned it before. Maybe one of the only funny things that James Corden has ever done, it's available on YouTube. He had somebody from the audience come out, because they tape next door to Price is Right. That's where the studio is. So they had somebody from the audience come out, and he came out, and they did the yodeling game. They brought out the official yodeling game. They did it, and he falls off the mountain, and they're like, oh, that's too bad. And all of a sudden, on the mountain come his family. Where are you? His child and his family, and then the paramedics come, and they start yelling at the contestant, you killed my father. It's hilarious. Hilarious. Find it on YouTube. Okay.
Next up, Patty Vasquez was talking about a certain movie club and mentioned how yours is so successful.
There are these screenings of classic movies. It seems like it's in conjunction with AMC.
Uh-huh.
Not the movie theater line, but the American Movie Classics.
Right.
And they show movies every month. Next month is Die Hard. They have these,
my gosh, really?
On the big screen again.
Wow.
I know. This is the thing. Maybe
we should go.
We should. There were like that six people. Fun. There were six people in the theater. I'm like, they don't do it like Nick D does.
Oh,
Nick D knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
He's got that stuff in line and people show up.
Yeah, they do. And I really appreciate it. We have regulars every month. And by the way, I'm showing The Longest Yard on November 13th. Tuesday, November 13th. That's called Fathom Productions, the people that are doing that. And Die Hard, listen to this, man. 30 years old. That's why they're
crazy town.
30. Okay.
All right, our final clip, Frank Fontana and Kathy Hart were filling in for John Williams earlier this week. They were talking about classic literature and horror things because of the season, and one of our regular listeners called in to talk to them and mentioned us.
Hey, hi guys. Enjoy the topic. My name is Pax, and I usually talk with Nick late at night. But this is a good topic. Mary Shelley, the wysfe of Percy Bysshe Shelley, the Romantic poet,
mm-hmm.
She entered a contest in the 1830s, a horror contest, and she came in third place, and she wrote Frankenstein.
Wow.
Oh, get out.
And Percy Bysshe Shelley entered her in. She didn't want to enter the contest, and she wrote it, and then it became a very famous work, and she always regretted that the monster had no name.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, Victor Frankenstein was the creator of the monster, but everybody thinks Frankenstein, that's the monster's name. And she always regretted that she never named him.
Well, that's crazy, an interesting stuff. Little yeah. bit of trivia. Thanks, Paxton.
Good nugget, Paxton.
Yeah, it's Paxton. Love him. Thanks for the mention, Paxton.
Yeah,
I appreciate
Paxton's
that.
An English teacher as well, so yeah. obviously he knows what he's talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, he's absolutely right on that, yeah. And it is he is just the monster. Everybody calls him Frankenstein, even Fartenstein. He's just the fart monster, really, technically. All right, should we start the thing?
When I grew up on the farm, fly was something we sprayed to kill, and jam was something we put on our breakfast toast.
Jam. Fly jam. Fly jams Friday.
Oh, yeah. This is Fly Jam Friday on your overnight radio with my man, Nick D, on 720 WGN.
That's right. Fly Jam requests are ready to go. DJ Shagru is here. I'm Wiki Wiki Nicky. Viggity Viggity Vic, double verified, double V, is ready to go. And we're here for you. 312-981-7200 for all Fly Jam requests and funky stuff. 312-981-7200. It'll be coming up after the news, which is next.
Did you still want me? So I let go.
One of my favorite fly jams of all time. That was my request. We haven't heard that one in a while. That's Tell Me If You Still Care by SOS Band. I love that song. SOS Band, they had a lot of good songs. They've had some serious fly jams, right, Dan?
Absolutely, and also some of the finest cover artwork with their aerial themes.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a fun video to watch. If you've ever seen the video, it's Dan, you were watching the video, right?
I am.
With all the people dancing. In the It's fantastic. 1983. Vintage 1983 right there. That is a fly jam. SOS Band. All right. It is Fly Jams Friday. And, if you want to get in here, we got some lines open. It's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. The Fly Jam requests are happening. DJ Shagru is ready to flip and spin and spin and flip, and I don't know what that means. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. By the way, we have a Blackhawks Express coming up in just a little bit, too, from last night's unfortunate game. So there you go. At least Crow was back in the net. Says he feels good, so that's good. They play again tomorrow. So, but we'll have that coming up anyway. All right, let's try this one out for size. 847 area code requested this one.
Because I give you all of my money. God, but you just won't treat me right. You like to fall in the morning, don't come back.
That's a fantastic song. Lloyd Price. You know, it's good timing on my sneezes. I just sneezed twice.
Oh, congratulations.
Right during the song. I didn't have to interrupt anything. All right. How about this one? Tom wanted to hear this. This is another legendary song right here.
A rainy night in Georgia. It seems like it's raining all over the world. I feel like it's raining all over the world. Neon signs are flashing, taxi cabs and buses passing through the night. A distant morning of a train seems to play a sad refrain.
That's a great song. That is a really, really great song. So there you go. All right. Phone lines are open, by the way. Get your requests in. Anything funky, anything R&B, anything fly, get them in now. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. All right. Here's Harold. Go ahead, Harold.
Hey, I got Dinner with Drek by Feel the Rhythm of the Night.
All right.
Was served for three at Count Dracula's castle by the sea. The hors d'oeuvres were fine, but I choked on my wine when I learned the main course was me.
Yeah. Oh. All right. Was it, is Dracula cannibal in that one? What's going on there? I learned that the main course was me?
Or maybe he was a guest at Dracula's feast. So it's like told from the perspective of you showing up to Dracula's castle.
Yeah. Okay. Well, hey, by the way, I just saw the Marcus climbing inside the damn coffin at Six Flags. You know, he's got a tombstone. They gave him his own tombstone above his coffin. The hell's wrong with you, Marcus? What are you doing? 30-hour challenge to stay in a coffin for 30 hours. You win two season tickets for Six Flags and $300. No. Marcus can't do that. He's got to work. Unless he does it over the weekend. Maybe he's going to do it over the weekend.
Mixing business with pleasure, and it's a wacky TV stunt, and He's going to be in it during the show.
That could be.
We'll be watching the Channel 9. We always watch the Channel 9 this morning.
Always.
But we were watching with bated breath this morning because the school Eileen teaches at had their big fundraiser, the kids-based fundraiser. And if they raised enough money, the principal and vice principal were going to sleep on the roof for the night. And so,
wait, how did that come about?
You know, they chose from five wacky things to do, and that's the one they chose. I'm sure not realizing how cold it would be this October night. So they are currently sleeping on the roof, and there's rumors because it's very close to WGN's TV station that there will be a flyover of Mr. C and Mr. Lasker.
Well, so we'll have to keep our eyes peeled for that. That's pretty funny. So they're up there right now. What did they raise?
They raised a lot of money. I forget what the number is, but they're in tents, and they've got portable heaters.
The kids are probably thrilled about that, right?
Oh, yeah.
They've got to be loving that.
For sure.
That's pretty funny. Well, congratulations.
Yeah, the ones that they raised the most money also donated blankets to them. So.
Oh, well, that's fun. How long do they have to stay through how long?
They were, he texted Eileen at 9 o'clock last night. So,
and they were up there at 9 o'clock
last
night?
So they were up there at 9 o'clock last night. And
8 hours, they've been up there for over 8 hours.
Yeah.
Now. Oh, yeah. Man.
So, and I imagine it's up until, school's open at 6:30. So.
Wow. Well, good for them for going through that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And raising all that money. Good for them. All right, cool. All right, let's see what Chuck has here. Hey, Chuck.
Hi, Nick.
Hi.
Asking the musical question this week, whatever happened to Johnny Gill with Fairweather Friend?
All right. And when the world seems to kill you, I'm there, baby, for you. I'll always be there. And that is a good question. Whatever happened? Thank you, Chuck. Whatever happened to Johnny Gill? Where's Johnny Gill, man? Not Johnny Gill, man. He would be the creature from the Black Lagoon if that were the case, because that's what they call the creature from the Black Lagoon. They call him the Gill Man. But I wonder whatever happened to Johnny Gill. Is he part of reunion tours and stuff? Because he had quite a run there in the 80s. So. Fairweather Friend. I mean, I haven't heard that one in a long time. Pretty fly, though. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. If you would like to make your Fly Jams request, the phone lines are open at 312-981-7200.
According to Wikipedia, the last entry, Gil will join Fantasia as the opener for Charlie Wilson's In It to Win It tour from last year.
What? The In It to Win It tour with Fantasia from American Idol? Wow. Okay. Johnny Gill, man. All right. So there you go. Oh, wait a second. I'm looking at this. Hold on, because now Marcus is doing his piece on the thing. Apparently, the coffin doesn't completely close. It's got a part in the, so your head can stick out. So it's not like you're in it. Now that would be easier to do, in my case, considering I'm massively claustrophobic.
Yeah.
So, it's still creepy though.
I think I'd prefer it the other way, as someone who's done this, you know, the sensory deprivation chamber.
Yeah.
I'd prefer it closed. I don't think I'd want it to be open a little bit. Yeah. I think I'd just let me sleep.
I would still freak out though if I were in it.
Right.
Because I can't be confined on my back, and it would freak me out. But yeah, his like half of his torso is sticking out. He gets a special coffin though, Marcus does, because it's got a gravestone. It's got his gravestone.
Well, I mean, he was the. What was it? He was the parade leader, whatever they call that.
The ringleader or whatever.
Grand Marshal.
Grand Marshal. That's right. Grand Marshal of the parade. All right. Good luck, Marcus. That's all I'm saying. All right. Let's take a break here. We've got some weather. We got some commercials. And then when we come back, it is the Blackhawks Express from last night's unfortunate game. We will play the highlights. And then we'll come back and we'll wrap up the show and Fly Jams Friday. 312-981-7200. Forever you and me. Only you can make me happy. Happy. Only you can make me happy. Do you remember Surface?
I do not.
I think they only had they only had a couple of like minor hits. They never really completely broke through, and they were at a time when everybody was making the same kind of music. You know, I mean, you could hear that sounds like every sort of late '80s sort of R&B song. So anyway, that was Surface with "Only You Can Make Me Happy." All right. Couple more requests here before we get out of here for the weekend. Let's hear. This is one of our classics. Dan, I would say
perhaps the most requested Fly Jam in the history of Fly Jams.
It could be the most requested Fly Jam in the history of Fly Jams. You're absolutely right.
Because we specifically try to avoid repeats.
Yeah.
You know, we like to give it at least a period of time before we repeat, but this one gets requested so often, it's like right always on the cusp of the
And it's okay because it's one of the flyest jams of all time. So
sorry, Cochran.
Chris requested this one. A present from you. Stop every letter twisted to the music plays I set in for. Jam. And I remember one morning I came down to do some crosstalk with Cochran, and it was on a Friday, and I came down just to hang out in the studio and talk with him, and he's like, why did you play Strawberry Letter 23? It's a terrible song. I'm like, what are you, out of your mind? He was just mad because we didn't play any Alexander O'Neill that morning. That's why.
That's true.
That's why he was upset.
Coincidentally, that would have been the next video up if we let Surface keep going with an Alexander O'Neill
track.
Oh,
wasn't
track.
Yes. Is that right? Okay, last one, and this is Dino, who wanted Weeks and Company with Rock Your World. Talking about rocking, There you go. Hey, coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right, thanks for your requests, and we'll do it again next week. We'll get all fly, and we'll get all jammed. We'll be fly jams once again next week.
Actually, spooky fly jams next week.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, last Friday before Halloween.
Oh, it'll be spooky fly jams. All right, everybody, get your spooky fly jam requests ready, and it'll be spooky fly jams in honor of Halloween. Boy, time's flying by, man. It's almost Halloween. So, all right. I'm very excited about the Halloween movie. I hope it's good. I really do. I really do. All right. All right, let's break here. We'll be back on Monday morning with that review of Halloween and more. And my dad will tell a joke, and we'll have a lot more stuff for Monday morning. So we'll take a break. The news is coming up next.